go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Weekend certainly went by in a bit of a hurry, it seemed. But here it is, a minute past 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Standard Time Zone in, as John Fox noted, the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. This is the Horn, headonradionetwork.com, available at said URL under the Listen Live tab, as well as on a number of streaming platforms such as the TuneIn app and the Stitcher app for your smartphone, so you can take the horn with you wheresoever thou goest, as well as platforms like Streama.com, Roku, Dar.fm. We are trying to get all over the place. You can get the podcast also at iTunes, and the podcast feed is at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, yes, the weekend is over, and it's more and Monday. And as sure as God made little green apples, weekends were made for the making of more ends. It happens all weekend long. In this particular instance, though, we had, as a nomination coming in from our buddy Marty points out, we had a bit of an open season on Morand last night, as brought to you by the American Broadcasting Company, otherwise known as ABC, in the form of the Oscars. I caught a little bit of grief online for admitting I was watching them. And see, that's what happens. Usually I reserve my television watching for a little bit of news here and there, or what passes for news, and maybe some, you know, the occasional movie. But last night we plugged in to watch the Oscars because, you know, there's no excuse. But every time I do try to get into the cultural mainstream, I find myself feeling like I've just walked into a sludge pit and just, yeah, oh, shower! You know, ick. That is to say, ick. But let us change cars. I've seen some bad Oscar broadcasts over the years, but I'm guessing Seth MacFarlane ain't getting asked back. Give me a few months and I think I can do that. No, I couldn't. But I think just about anybody else could. I mean, how much brains and talent does it take to make jokes about a 9-year-old? Because he did. And I guess that means that we are, well, okay, a couple of program announcements. I hope you caught yesterday's Prism West Virginia American History Chat. I hope you've caught a lot of them, because they're really, really special, and they contain voluminous amounts of fascinating information that you can use day to day in simply understanding how this country got to be the way it is. And I say that I hope you've caught a lot of it because I'm hoping you'll catch a lot more of it. Tentatively, we are planned, and I've talked about this in the past, but I want to make a big deal out of this. I want to let this sort of stand on its own. Tentatively, we're looking at bringing Dr. Bill O'Brien back to the air. And I hope you will want to be part of the conversation. This is not going to be your everyday progressive conversation radio, to the extent that conversation radio it can even be considered every day. Starting off from Monday through Wednesday, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., on the horn, we're going to be bringing you 2 hours of Dr. Bill O'Brien in something that is very specifically tailored to be an understanding of the foundations of government and politics in this country and how history overlaps with the present. That's pretty ambitious, isn't it? Yes, it is. And if there's one human being who can do it, it's Dr. Bill O'Brien. Dr. Bill, you may recall, for those of you who know the history of the horn, Dr. Bill had a liberal, progressive radio show on terrestrial radio in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market. And filling in for him was how I got back into radio. Dr. Bill is first and foremost an educator, but he is very much also a capable conversationalist and able to make connections that perhaps others don't necessarily see because of the depth of his historical knowledge. So, starting Monday at 4 p.m., 4 to 6, Monday through Wednesday, and if the thing takes off, we'll go even further. 4 to 6, Monday through Wednesday, Dr. Bill will be on the air, and hopefully, at some point, taking your calls. I can't tell you how thrilled I am to be bringing Dr. Bill back to the air. We will make all the necessary arrangements for his show to be archived and to be podcastable. And I would say that after a few weeks of Dr. Bill, you're going to feel like you're receiving a master's degree level education, because in essence that's what you will be receiving. No charge, it's just more of what the horn does. This entire voluntary based model of trying to expand the meaning of broadcasting within the realms of the interweb tubes. See, Dr. Bill is a real, live, honest-to-goodness intellectual. You can spot those because they do not feel compelled to convince you of their brilliance. You can sit down and have any number of conversations with Dr. Bill, and at no point in time will you feel like he's trying to make you understand how much smarter he is than you. In fact, Dr. Bill is as likely to say that you're probably smarter than he is. And that will, I hope, be a refreshing change from some so-called intellectuals out there on the radio. 4 to 6 p.m., Monday through Wednesday, right here on the horn, the Dr. Bill O'Brien. We're still working on a name for the show, but it'll be here. Email coming in from our buddy Michael. Z-O-M-G, Zomg. Finally, something to listen to in the afternoon besides Ed. No, but seriously, I always enjoyed Dr. Bill's show. one of the smartest broadcasters I have ever heard. Good news. And it is. Thanks for the backup, Michael. A lot of you remember Dr. Bill. Some of you are following the Prism series, and you know how engaging what he has to offer can be. There ain't going to be nothing like it nowhere. So I urge you to check it out, and I'll talk more about this as the week goes on. But that's where that is. Okay, another thing to get out of the way. This is the 25th day of February. There are 3 days left. Well, four counting today's show. With that in mind, I can tell you that we are about $400 from meeting the monthly fundraising goal. And so we did meet, thank you very, very much, we did meet Dr. Allen's challenge, but we didn't quite catch up with Friday's fundraising. And that leaves, but anyway, the bottom line is here in the last waning days of February, in order to ensure that there is a march for the horn, and here we are getting all ambitious and launching a new show, you know, we need to raise about $400. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The snail mail address is there, too. The snail mail address being The Horn, or Head On Radio Network, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, just like the president, PMB 318, stands for personal mailbox, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. Any checks, money orders, whatever, please make them to The Horn. Don't make them to Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid does not get the money. The Horn does, and it goes toward keeping all of this going. Boss Man Wayne is in charge of the mailbox. So we're looking for about $400 between now and the end of February to get us through March. I sure hope it happens. Thank you, Clayton. Clayton getting it started. $25 here. $375. And, yeah. So thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, if you notice, that actually, we're a little bit ahead, technically speaking. $400 in 4 days is somewhat less than the $150 we try to raise on a general basis. So, yeah, it's that day. Yeah, you know what day.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right, that's right. It's Moran Monday on the Horn. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe the Morans you are about to hear, the Morans you are about to experience. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, are Morans of the, well, the crazy Morans, dangerous Morans, guy Morans, girl Morans, 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 Morans. And you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Moran Monday on the Horn. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh, God, ain't it true. Can we start with the No Fun League? The NFL? And, you know, I'm usually kind of leery. Well, not leery, but let's put it this way. Some of you guys push back if when and if we periodically talk about sports. But you got to bear with this just a little bit longer. NBC News, or NBC Sports, has a guy who covers the more personality-driven and nuts-and-boltsy issues of the NFL. Trades, things like that. He runs something called Pro Football Talk. His name's Mike Florio. Full disclosure, Mike Florio was a classmate of mine. He appeared on Dan Patrick's radio show, and I really respect Dan Patrick as a broadcaster. He's very, very good at what he does. This will not go on the highlight reel. I do not have audio for you. But you may recall, and it was a very silly, silly situation, you may recall shortly after the new year, the story broke of Notre Dame linebacker Manti Te'o's imaginary girlfriend who died. And, of course, the Notre Dame PR machine had gone along with it for months and months, and she was in a car crash, and then they determined during the car crash that she had terminal cancer, and they would stay on the on cell phones together all night, and she would fall asleep listening to him, and vice versa, and blah, 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 only it was all bullshit. She never existed. In fact, the whole dodge was come up with by another guy. So this is the transcript from Mike Florio talking to Dan Patrick about Manti Te'o. On the field, you still have to account for what happened in the BCS National Championship game against Alabama, Florio told the Dan Patrick Show. Okay, it's not really a transcript. And what happened against Alabama was that Alabama treated him like a midget league player. Here's the elephant in the room, Florio says, for the teams, and it shouldn't matter. Notice Florio says it shouldn't matter. But we have to step aside from the rest of reality and walk into the unique industry that is the NFL. In other words, it shouldn't matter, but we're going to let the NFL pretend that it matters because the NFL is basically why we have a paycheck. Then this. Teams want to know whether Manti Te'o is gay. They just want to know. They want to know because in an NFL locker room, it's a different world. It shouldn't be that way. But I'm going to keep talking about it, even though I say it shouldn't be that way. See, here's the moran part of this exchange. If it shouldn't be that way, what you do is you say, well, you have to account for what happened in the BCS National Championship game against Alabama, because that poor a performance probably would have an impact on an NFL franchise's willingness to draft him. So far, new problems. But then you don't talk about elephants in the room. And then you don't talk about giving the NFL a pass because, well, it's the NFL and there's these locker rooms and, you know, there's all that towel snapping on butts that go on. And it, right. You know, so it's the NFL and they want to know if they've got any, you know, homer sectionals in the locker room. Jesus criminy. Now, Dan Patrick let Mike Florio just kind of keep feeding himself rope. But he did eventually interrupt to ask him, you're telling me that you're hearing from teams who want to know this, but how do you ask it? Are they trying to find a finesse way to ask that question? Are they going to do investigative work on finding out if Manti Te'o is gay? Huh? The stupid. It hurts us. What would that be? Honest to God, what would that be? What would be investigative work on finding out if Manti Te'o is gay. Because I'm kind of beat. I mean, do you put a private investigator on him? Do you follow him to see if he goes to, oh, I don't know, a nail salon in West Hollywood to get his mani and pedi on? See? It's stupid. Then, not citing any actual sources, because that would be journalism, Mike Florio said, it's been described to me as the proverbial elephant in the room, and I don't think anyone knows how to solve this dilemma yet. It's just that they want to know what they're getting. They want to know what issues they may be dealing with down the road. We just assume. Now, see, stop it, damn it. What issues they may be dealing with down the road. You know what? Somewhere out there, in this year's NFL draft, will be a kid who gets drafted who has been nothing but trouble. His entire college career. DUI here, B&E there, here an assault, there a battery, everywhere. Right. But some enterprising college coach managed to keep him in the lineup and keep the local heat off of him. Because, you know, he's a talented young man who just needs a little direction in his life. And somebody, probably Jerry Jones, will take a chance on him. I mean, think, you know, Pac-Man Jones, okay? There's too many to even try to list. What do they call discipline problems? And if you've got a kid who, or let's say you're drafting a hotshot quarterback with a taste for non-consensual sex, you know, with females, who engages in risk-taking behavior like riding motorcycles really poor, very heavy motorcycles very poorly. Who might be at a risk down the road of maybe getting sideways on the thing and nearly killing himself and head injury. You want to know about that kind of stuff because there are insurance policies involved. But when I read, they want to know what issues they may be dealing with down the road, that's straight out of some filthy-ass fundamentalist right-wing playbook that says, well, we have to... What? No, it's straight out of Tennessee Senator Don't Say Gay's playbook. Well, we want the teachers to be a call in the home and telling the mamas and their daddies that their babies might be queer because that queer being is kind of... Well, I think kind of that's risk-taking behavior is what that is. Don't listen to me. Right? That's a right-wing talking point that somehow being gay is risky behavior. Yeah, see, you guys don't miss much. Diane on Facebook just said, who would that be? Who would have one of those, Bob Kincaid? Do tell. And that's the other little moran nugget inside this story. Because I mentioned getting one's mani and pedi on in West Hollywood. See, this is an onion. Not the onion. There's another Moran nomination for the onion. But this is layers upon layers upon layers. Here you've got Mike Florio adopting a right-wing talking point that being gay is some sort of risk-taking behavior. And, of course, there is the inherent assumption that because he says, oh, they just want to know what issues they may be dealing with down the road. We just assumed that at some point there would be an openly gay player in an NFL locker room, and the team would have to work with the realities and make sure that everything's fine. Well, on the one hand, it seems to me, from the sounds of things, that an openly gay player would be fine if he was drafted into the locker room of, say, the Baltimore Ravens, the Super Bowl champion Baltimore Ravens. Because there have been overt things said about, hey, gay, straight, who cares? Can you play football? Right? On the other hand, he might not be so welcome in, say, the locker room of the Super Bowl losing San Francisco 49ers, who had a player say, no, we don't do that sweet stuff, man. So there is an assumption to be made that there are barbarians within the National Football League. But there are also enlightened people like the punter for the Minnesota Vikings. Can't remember his name. Sorry, dude. Been described to me as the proverbial elephant in the room. Mike Florio was very proud of that because he used that phrase twice. Really? In 2013, elephant in the room is the same as gay? I mean, when you've got an elephant in the room, you've got a problem. I mean, even if the elephant just stands there and doesn't do anything else but what an elephant stands there and does sometimes, you've got a problem because it happens a ton at a time. That's a problem. It's a big problem. Big, smelly problem. Elephant in the room. Just like being gay. Big problem. See how disgusting this is? Because there is a there's another backstory. And the backstory is that for 2 or 3 years now, there's been a guy in the NFL who, I feel safe saying, because it's happened on this program, sets the gaydar of lots of gay guys right off the meters. Just ding, you know, done. Who actually did get photographed in West Hollywood, home of Tegay, getting his mani and pedi done. Who runs around kissing guys on his team. Who also happens to be a fundamentalist, Bible-believing Christian with a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. And all that silly BS. That guy happens to be Tim Tebow, who is very well connected via a foundation to the very same religion industry in Colorado Springs that gave us Ted Haggard, who used to deliver blisteringly homophobic sermons until he was caught snorting meth off the butt of a gay hooker. Tim Tebow even likes to go to the Philippines and assist in circumcisions. Now, there's been all this smoke out there. Now, I will say, it doesn't matter. This is about hypocrisy. Because there's been gaydars going off from sea to shining sea for 3 or 4 or 5 years over Tim Tebow. yet suddenly a guy has an imaginary girlfriend and happens to be a person of color, and suddenly everybody's all worried that they might, you know, have a homosexual in the locker room. Ron and Raleigh ever at the ready. Hey, Bob, last night I shot an elephant in my pajamas. What an elephant was doing in my pajamas, I don't know. Ron says, I couldn't help myself. I understand when the moment, when it's in the moment, it's unavoidable. Marty pointing out that Mr. Manti Te'o apparently ran a 4.8240 in the NFL meat market combines. His stock has just dropped a little bit. Well, but we can make him faster, but we can't make him straighter. See, we want to know what we're going to get. Granted, right now he looks like a slew-footed little linebacker is what we're going to get. But we want to make sure he's not a gay slew-footed little linebacker. Is he the standard at work here? White, fundamentalist, Christian... No, we won't ask those questions. Person of color with fake girlfriend? Well, they want to know what issues they may be dealing with down the road. Now, bear in mind, of course, that the NFL, as of 2011, has a sexual orientation non-discrimination policy within its operating bylaws. So even if we just want to know what we're going to be dealing with down the road, what the does that mean? Well, what it means is, I mean, is he going to want to bring an interior decorator into the locker room and put sconces and all that monogram towels and them little soaps that shaped like seashells. We just want to know what we're going to get into down the road. And what if the gay spreads? I mean, we don't want to be just because we may wind up with the first openly gay NFL player, which we ain't saying he's going to be. We also don't want to wind up having it catching and wind up being the first openly gay NFL team. I mean, then where'd you be? The beer-drinking necks will stay away in droves, don't you know? So here's a story where Mike Florio says it shouldn't matter and then proceeds to go on and on and on and on, making it pretty freaking obvious that it does matter to at least Mike Florio. And this is kind of surprising to me. Mike's a good guy. Nice guy. Smart guy. Ought to be better than this. But do at least take notice of the fact that there probably always will be an open, double, triple, quadruple, septuple, sow-cow standard in the NFL. And probably most other professional sports. Because we just ain't... We just ain't that unbarbarianized yet. But I try to crawl out from around my white privilege every now and then. And when I saw that story, I went, wait. They're going to ask the brown guy, but they didn't ask the white guy? Lottie is being incorrigible in the chat room. Have you been to the chat room? Jump on in. It's a fine evening. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. Bob, go easy on him. After all, he's just asking if there'll be some nice young firm butt for him to watch next season. Now, come on, you guys. We're trying to be civilized here. You're more than welcome, Artie. Thanks for the Ted Haggard imagery, Bob. Anymore, and I'll need a lobotomy to erase it. Oh, just scrub it with a little añejo rum, Artie. And then, meanwhile, Michael, looking into his crystal ball, which apparently works much better than my cracked magic 8-ball that forever says answer hazy, ask again later. Subject line, teoing, Breitbart style. Bob, by the end of the week, some crazy right-wing sports blogger will have at this, and Breitbart will pick it up. Chuck Hagel secretly Manti Te'o's girl boyfriend. And Senator Cruz, or maybe Lindsey Graham, for added irony, will be citing it on the Senate floor. Jesus, I can't stand it. I can't stand it. Oh, and by the way, thank you, Michael, and thank you, Linda. We are now at $325 needed to finish out the month of February, for which we are intensely thankful. But no, we do. We got plenty of morans. And I did. Agnes and I did. We tuned in about halfway through the Academy Awards. At least, we were both quite taken with Anne Hathaway, who seems very much like a new modern-day Audrey Hepburn, and I think that image is being cultivated. It seems really decent. Seth MacFarlane was awful. Not just bad. Truly awful. This was not an improvement from last year. At least, what's his name? Russell Brand? Was edgy. Seth MacFarlane was sort of like a burned out comedian who had gone way, way down the food chain and was working the 2 a.m. slot at the all-you-can-eat buffet on the outskirts of Reno. But like I said, I took a little grief for it. But daggum, there are always moments and they're fun little cultural moments. I can never say how I would behave in such a situation. I might just wait backstage, throwing back glasses of champagne or whatever the hell they're passing around back there that Renee Zellweger got held of. She came on with Richard Gere and Queen Latifah and Catherine Zeta-Jones to give out something or another, and they brought them back for a couple of different... And Renee, on whom I admit once having a crush, to the point that every now and then Agnes will squint her eyes and screw her face up real good, and I'll go, baby! I'm not laughing at my own joke. I'm laughing at it because it's funny. And she'll say something like, you had me at liberal. Renee Zellweger was wasted. To the point of not being able to read or speak. Now, I'm going to feel terrible if I find out that she'd had some sort of terrible allergic reaction, but I will then apologize. This isn't about that. This is an excuse. This is by way of excuse making for why we watched it. And some of the dresses were real pretty. We watched it in part because Margie loves and Agnes loves Adele. I loved what Chris Hayes tweeted. The Academy invite. Hey, Nora Jones, come out here and sing for a couple of minutes before we give the Oscar to Adele. I laughed out loud at that one. Michael, who is now really working this angle, Senator Hagel, did you or did you not meet Manti Te'o on friendsofhamasmingle.com?
Oh, God.
Marty pointing out, the Oscars, the best reason for Twitter I can think of. Yeah, the Twitter feed was a hell of a lot of fun. Most of it, except for the Moran nomination. And yeah, there were fun little moments like Jennifer Lawrence tripping on the stairs, but she was so tickled. Bless her. Yeah, I felt good for her because she's from the free state of Louisville, which means she's almost the hillbilly that she portrayed in The Hunger Games. What was it, 12? But no, Seth MacFarlane was kind of disgusting. You gotta really, really be working the bottom of the barrel to make jokes about 9-year-olds. I'm really excited to see, when it becomes possible, Beasts of the Southern Wild. Am I pronouncing it right? Cuvenzane Wallace? Cuvenzane? I apologize. Youngest ever Best Actress nominee. And everything I've read says that she did a magnificent job in Beasts of the Southern Wild. And so being a little person who was sitting in her chair, behaving quite well, thank you very much, and flashing devastating smiles every time the camera got anywhere near her. Well, she was fair game. Here's the line from Seth MacFarlane. To give you an idea of how young she is, it'll be 16 years before she's too young for Clooney. Which was kind of a George Clooney joke.
You don't know.
I mean, that's the elephant in the room. Do you make jokes about 9-year-olds? Mean, sexually oriented jokes about 9-year-olds? I mean, it's the elephant in the room. It's tasteless. It's just shitty. Can we say that? I think we can. It's the internet. Right, right, Texas Betsy. You do not make sexual jokes about a 9-year-old. What was this? Some sort of initiation ritual? Well, you know, she's going to work in the business. She's going to have to root hog or die. Tough hide lasts the longest. Gotta have pretty thick skin to work out here in Hollywood, sweetheart. But yeah, we're gonna make some jokes about you tonight. You all right with that? We're gonna talk about you getting in bed and having sex with George Clooney. Is that okay? Texas Betsy pointing out only other 9-year-olds can make jokes about 9-year-olds, and even then we look for bullying, and that's what it boils down to. Seth MacFarlane was a bully. That was bullying behavior. If Seth MacFarlane was 9 years old and said that way, we would recognize it, I'm guessing Texas Betsy would recognize it right away, as bullying conduct. And then The Onion. Where are we? Now, I'm not going to sit here and deliver we're going to hell, and our culture's falling apart, and society collapsing from poisonous food, and all we need is a little Jesus, and things will get better. I'm not going to do that. Yes, Texas Betsy would call that bullying. Not what I just said, that if a 9-year-old would do. Except that most 9-year-olds don't know who George Clooney is. Don't tell George. But no. The Onion at least had the common decency to promptly apologize. The Onion tweeted and then subsequently deleted the following. Everyone else seems afraid to say it, but Quavenzhané Wallace is kind of a C-word. Right? Hashtag Oscars 2013. Really? So, in the space of a couple of hours, the fantastically well-paid, underperforming host of the Oscars makes a joke about a 9-year-old someday having sex with George Clooney. While a website that is usually known for biting satire, but not just dirty-ass low blows, calls this child a C-word. I'm not going to say the word out loud. It makes me sick. But between these two stories, the elephant in the room about whether Manti Te'o likes other guys, and making nasty-ass jokes about the sexuality of a 9-year-old, do we get a little snapshot of how brutal so-called pop culture is, and where we stand in terms of trying to think about, even think about, concepts of equality in this country? Because even though the joke failed, and even though the Onion offered a seemingly profound apology, Steve Hanna, the CEO of The Onion, said, "I offer my personal apology and for the tweet that was circulated last night during the Oscars. It was crude and offensive, not to mention inconsistent with The Onion's commitment to parody and satire, however biting." Okay. No person should be subjected to such a senseless, humorless comment masquerading as satire. The tweet was taken down within an hour of publication. We've instituted new and tighter Twitter procedures to ensure that this kind of mistake does not occur again. In addition, we're taking immediate steps to discipline those individuals responsible. Ms. Wallace, you are young and talented and deserve better. All of us at The Onion are deeply sorry. Meanwhile, no apology forthcoming from Seth MacFarlane. Nor will there likely be one. But here, in 2013, in the second decade of the 21st century, we see on bright, vivid display what privilege really means. We saw it at the Oscars, and we see it in the NFL. We see that it does not attach to men of color or men of so-called suspect sexuality, and it doesn't even attach to 9-year-olds who have the, I guess what, within the broad cultural purview, who lack the privilege of being white and male. For she is black and female, and we can make sex jokes about her. So that's just a couple of more In Monday nominees. Let's go to Skype. Sandra is with us. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob, how's it going?
Ah, pretty good, I think. I mean, well, you know, in context.
This is a feminist named Michelle Wallace. She kind of encapsulates the whole thing for me. She wrote, African-American women, we have high visibility combined with an almost total lack of voice. And to me, that just sort of says the whole thing. I mean, it can't be any clearer to me than that statement. For black women or children or whatever, black females. And, the Onion, that's completely a nightmare. I don't even understand what the hell was going on. They would never have tweeted that about that white girl a couple of years ago. She was 7 who was up for a nomination. You see what I'm saying? It's very deep what that was about. Because that wouldn't have been tweeted about some little white actress.
No, never in a million years.
Not at all. And the fact that associate that word with blackness is the issue here.
Well, that word is in this culture toxic. I know it's used more broadly in other cultures, but in this culture, it has only one meaning, and there ain't nothing nice about it. And it would never have been used against a little white girl. Evade it.
I didn't watch that movie. I don't even know what movie the girl was in. So but it doesn't really matter to me. I am curious. What was the movie she was in?
Beasts of the Southern Wild. It's kind of a fable, if I understand correctly. It's set in Louisiana. It's about a little girl and her dying father.
Well, I mean, are there some sort of sexual themes in the movie? I mean, I'm just curious.
I don't know how you could do a sexual theme with a 5-year-old little girl.
Well, you know, who knows? I mean, anytime they have people of color involved with the Oscars, like Halle Berry, you saw the movie she was nominated for.
Yeah.
Huh? I mean, I'm just like sort of curious about, like, Precious. You saw that movie.
Sure.
I mean, you didn't see it, but you saw the scenes. I mean, anytime there's black people at the Oscars, they only seem to focus in on, quote, pathologies. I put that in quotes. So I'm just, because I don't see any of this. I don't know anything about it, but I really don't understand what the guy was talking about at the Oscars, whoever that comedian was, or The Onion. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Except for the historical context of how black females are kind of dealt with in this society.
Well, and Seth MacFarlane made it worse because, you know, as one of the articles I read put it, you know, it could have been a joke about George Clooney's predilection for younger women. But then Seth MacFarlane turns around and throws him a mini bottle of liquor as if, you know, hey, buddy, yeah, ha-ha. It was sleazy, and this sleaziness has a way of coming up time and time again, Sandra.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, like I said, I didn't watch the Oscars. I mean, to be honest, I could care less. But I did see, you know, I was looking at my tweet feed, and I did see all that pop up, and I was just like, oh my God, you know, because that word is so strong, it is so over the top. That's why, and I'm thinking, a 9-year-old, when what possible world, except for the racialized nightmare that is the U.S., that would pop up? You see what I'm saying? And The Onion, whatever. I don't really know what. I guess they lost their minds for a few minutes there. Good night.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was, you know, it was that sort of dry stuff that The Onion does every now and then. that, you know, she really is kind of a, but that's that wry wink and a nod kind of, I don't know, ironic young hip white folks humor. Is that what
that
is?
Well, yeah, exactly. But we're not, you know, we're not. Yeah, but it's not funny though. I mean, it's just, it's really disturbing. I can't, you know, white hipster, whatever, all that. None of that can justify.
No, that was not the way it was. No, it's beneath contempt.
Well, and it's just, you know, anyway, I mean. Yeah, it's that was a bit special. And that Manti, I mean,
do you understand the point that I'm trying to make in that context?
What, with Tim Tebow?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, you know, how long did that preacher go for years? What was his name? You mentioned him.
Oh, Ted Haggard.
Yeah, I mean, you know, how long was he running that scam on folks? And, you know, nobody was asking a question about him. And I think that, you know, short of Tebow coming out, marching into the New York Gay Day Parade, ain't nobody going to say nothing about him either.
No. And see, but this is interesting. Did you catch the Tebow flap from last week?
No, I know. What was that? What did I miss?
He signed on to go and deliver some uplifting personal testimonial, and that's all well and good, and I'm sure he does a lot of it, but this time he signed on to go and do it at I think it's First Baptist Church of Dallas, which happens to be the bishopric, emphasis on prick, of one Pastor Robert Jeffress.
Now, gay hating extraordinary.
He ain't just gay hating, he may be like Maureen Dowd. He don't like anybody. Because he's the one who said that Mitt Romney was a member of a cult, but then said we'd rather have a cultist than, you know, that Obama.
Right. Oh, okay.
But he's a gay baiting, gay hating, gay bashing, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, you know, that kind of stupidity. And so Tebow signed on to go speak, and then all of a sudden it blew up. And Tebow stepped back and canceled the appearance.
Oh, well, I suppose. I mean, no one can ever say that. Yeah, okay, I guess he reined it in a bit. I'm kind of surprised, but yeah. Oh, well, maybe he has some handlers who kind of tapped him on the shoulder there.
It's possible, but I'm, you know, after a while...
Well, maybe
after a while, the closet gets to be a really nasty place. And
yeah, maybe he's laying the groundwork to, you know, come out or something really shocking and funny.
Well, you know,
Jesus
talks to him.
Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus talks to him every day. Maybe he needs to, maybe, you know what? I would have a whole new world of respect for Tim Tebow if he said, I am, you know, I'm Christian. I have a deep personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I am gay, 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 gay. And that's the end of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, he can still love Jesus. Jesus will still love him. No, but, you know, I'm not going to hold my breath because, you know.
No, we'll have to wait for him to get caught snorting the meth off a gay hooker's butt.
Well, Andy, you know, another thing, speaking of sports right quick, some statistics that I saw, I was like, I mean, not that I'm not too surprised, but it's still a bit shocking. It was just sort of a breakdown of the reporter. So it's basically 90% white across the board with copy editors, columnists, the whole nine yards, and men. So it's about, yeah, 86% male, or no, white and 90% male or something. And I don't, you know, it just seems kind of shocking.
And the same thing, oddly enough, applies with the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences. 70% of the people who vote on these awards, 70% of the people who create this this culture that you just described, whenever black females are in, they're guys.
Mm.
And most of them are white.
Too. That was another notice I saw, that they're all like in their 60s.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the Academy Award, when it meets any kind of diversity, it's just a disaster every time. Every time. So, you know, but the idea that some child is subjected, you know, it makes me feel queasy. Sorry. I'm like, oh my God. But then again, why should we be surprised when children and youth are pretty much despised in this country? Can I just say that?
I think, well, yes.
You know, because, yeah, I just, you know, they just seem to be really stressed out, the, you know, youngsters, you know, so.
For good reason. It's a pretty damn stressful world we're living in. I know this because of having, you know, having more than a little bit of contact with some teenagers and having been one myself, it really is a different world.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking of in the context of the sort of neoliberal kind of America that we live in, there's not a whole lot of room for young people and the support because it's in contradiction with the economic system, you know?
No, I mean, I know that there is absolutely nothing. There's absolutely nothing for kids around here. And we want, you know, there are certain elements that want it that way, because if there's nothing around here, then, you know, by God, Jimmy Jack, get your ass into the coal mines. Shut up.
Well, but it's just kind of, I mean, it's really, it's just harsh because, you know, if you're not bringing something to the quote table, then there's no use for you, even if you're a child. But they've kind of abolished the child labor laws for now. So, you know, I mean, I just think kids are kind of tolerated. Unlike the kids in Spain. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a whole different type of mentality here. And kids of color is even, you know, just even obviously more so, you know, hence Chicago, if you want to look at that place.
Yeah. And I guess there's been some research done about where all those guns in Chicago are coming from.
Well, they're coming from, you know, Crackville. Sorry.
Well, no, they're coming from Talibandiana.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's like they're coming, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where, you know, home of the Klan.
Yeah, and like everything else in this country, it's always a race to the bottom. So wherever the least resistance is where you can find whatever you need, if it's guns or cheap labor or anything. You know, there's the regulation is such that all the state, all everybody will go to wherever is cheapest, or you know, no gun control or whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, you.
Yeah,
could...
I read that they're all flooding into Chicago, which has sort of stricter gun laws, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But somehow the gun laws in Chicago are proof that gun laws don't work when it's not Chicago's gun laws that are letting the guns come into Chicago.
That's what I mean by state to state. I mean, you can't regulate something like firearms from state to state. You see what I mean? I mean, just
right.
It's ridiculous on the face of it.
And I think what that points to is the fact that this anachronistic idea that attended the founding, that we were going to, that every state was going to be a sovereign nation unto itself.
Yeah.
Has way outlived its usefulness. We need national firearms legislation.
And with voting.
And with voting. And frankly,
and
with insurance.
What was that?
Insurance.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and usury. We need to end that madness with the credit cards. I mean, we can go on and on and on with it. But in the meanwhile, though, I must mention this because I'm sitting here kind of stupefied that these cuts, I don't think people realize that this is like a dream come true for these freaks, these elites. Because this shit will go through, and it'll be a hell of a time clawing back to restore this sort of funding. This is a thing that people seem to forget once it's gone. That's why you don't see the White House and no one else kind of jumping around too much. Have you noticed that?
Yep.
So it's kind of like...
Well, this looks a little bit like a grand bargain, doesn't it?
Well, they're squirming with the military side of it, but I think they're more than happy to. I mean, this is austerity right here. This is austerity for real.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to have a rolling set of budget cuts that is going to, like, extract huge amounts from the economy.
Well, what? The conservative estimate was 700,000 jobs down the toilet?
You know, and it's just kind of... Anyway, I'm kind of gobsmacked that this is... seem to be happening, and there doesn't seem to be too much.
Well, did you see this? Did you see this list that the White House put out of what the sequester will do state by state?
No, I just saw what was going on for California. To be honest, I didn't see any of the rest. Of
well, what's really shocking? Yeah. What's really shocking though is when you look at the hammer that gets dropped on Alabamistan or Talibandiana.
Right.
Or any of these other places. You know, they hate the federal government. But you learn real quick that they're kind of dependent upon it. All these sovereign states ain't quite as sovereign as that malarkey would tend to indicate. Good God, since it's at the top of the list, just for the fun of it, Sandra, Alabama. They'll lose $11 million in funding for primary and secondary education. That'll put 150 teacher and aide jobs at risk. 21,000 fewer students would be served, and approximately 40 fewer schools would receive funding. 940 fewer low-income students in Alabama would get work-study in college. Head Start would be eliminated for 1,100 children. $2 million would be gone in environmental funding for clean water and clean air. $176.9 million disappearing from the Alabama National Guard. 2,100 fewer children immunized, nutrition assistance for seniors, $865,000 gone. And, yeah, you're absolutely right, Sandra. All of that would have to, at some point in time, be clawed back. And tell me what Congress would do that.
Well, yeah, and it's just kind of, in that case, it just makes a shithole shittier. I'm sorry. I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, that's incredible. It underpins exactly what these cuts are going to do. Wow. I don't even know what to say. It's so manufactured and just really cruel for no real reason, Bob.
Well, but consider also what the alternative is, or what the proposal is now from the geniuses. In the right wing of the Congress. Well, what we need to do is delay implementation of that Medicaid expansion.
Well, yeah, I mean, they always go back to they're obsessed with the, Obamacare. Or
I think that's the reason. That's the reason they really want to compel that onto the table. Because, not to pat myself on the back or anything, they can holler about the mandate all they want to. And the insurance companies can piss and moan about having to cover pre-existing conditions. But the thing that makes the greatest amount of difference is the Medicaid expansion, and they will burn this because that's the front end of a true universal single-payer health care system, and they will burn this country to the ground to stop that from happening.
Well yeah. I mean, and also, basically, it extends help to people that they despise. So,
sure.
it just goes against so much of what they're about.
Well, consider what happened in Florida. Did you see the story the other day, Sandra, where Rick Scott, Rick Scott has decided he would sign on to the Medicaid expansion?
Yeah, what's that about?
Well, the progressive world went, yay! Right, okay. But there was a little dependent clause deep in the story, buried lead time, where it said that Scott agreed to the Medicaid expansion only after he was permitted to privatize it. And
how
I saw.
How are you going to do that?
Oh, you know, it'll be turned over and administered by Blue Cross State Farm Allstate.
And the Fed said yes to that?
And the Fed said yes.
That just goes back to what I think the Obamacare thing is really all about, is to just turn over as many people as possible to this sort of private, you know, insurance hell, compel them. If he's getting away with that, wow, that's an outrage. I have to look into that.
And yet I didn't do an exhaustive search or anything, but I read that and you know, all the sirens went off and the smoke started coming out of my ears, and I couldn't find where anybody said, but it was all the headlines were another Republican governor accepts Medicaid expansion.
Yeah,
and they're being ballyhooed as some sort of visionaries, when all he did was he saw, you know, a couple of billion dollars coming to Florida. And he said, Jesus Christ, I'll take that and give it to my buds.
Well, yeah, and that'll just turn into some sort of shitty policy where you have like 20,000 deductible before anything kicks in, no doubt.
Well, no, they will have to operate within the confines of Medicaid itself. But it's going to be administered by the private sector, so that means they'll have all that money, and then they'll sit there and bust their ass trying to keep from authorizing procedures.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's just if it's private, it's still going to be something incredibly shitty for people. I didn't know that. Because anything I hear about Rick, I just think, well, he's a crook, so whatever it is has to be horrible for Floridians. That's my usual take on anything that comes out of his office, you know?
Well, sure.
Oh, but breaking news, 50 unseen Kipling poems discovered. I know that makes the white world right for everybody.
Wait, 50 unseen?
Rudyard Kipling poems.
Oh, well. You mean the white man's burden will be further expanded upon?
Right, I thought that's a bit apt.
Oh, God.
So they're reporting that every team, that's like the question they're asking because of what? I'm confused. What does that have to do with his play on the field?
Not a damn thing as far as I can tell.
But now, they're talking about four, the locker room, they're running that line out again? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Ugh.
Now, that 4-8-2-40 is going to drive, it might even drive him into the third round. But
the what?
That 4-8-2-40 ran the 40 in 4.82.
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah, I thought you said my big, oh, okay, so.
No, that's where the market is at work, but, you know, why do you... Dan Patrick's a brilliant broadcaster. What was the purpose? What was the point?
Yeah, no, that's a bit.
And you know,
it had all so pedestrian. I mean,
well,
it had
all the earmarks of the Fox News style book. Some people say, I've talked to a lot of people, and they say, you know, bullshit. You know, this is not Watergate, and we're not talking about Deep Throat. Name some freaking sources. Because some people say is just plain old fashioned BS. Until it gets some meat on the bones.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard. You can't even.
You know what NFL general manager is worrying is really out there, going all shaky kneed over the idea of having a gay guy in the locker room. I guarantee you, if they had somebody who was openly gay who ran a 3.940, that would be suddenly that team would become the most gay friendly NFL franchise in history. Yeah,
I know. It's always kind of, I mean, that's why I'm surprised by that story anyway. It's like, oh, my God. Oh, well, anyway, I'm still sort of, I'm sorry to keep jumping around, but just back to what Obama released about each state. So the White House is now using, we need to show how the cuts are going to impact now in order to drive the Republicans to some sort of deal? Is that what their strategy is?
Yeah, I guess the idea is that you'll get people shook up back in the home district and they'll lean on their congressman.
Well, did you ever see, Adam, have you ever seen Family Guy?
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay. Wait, do you remember the episode when the wife was running for some election and she just kept saying
9/11.
9/11?
Well, and Jesus.
The woman from the, what's her name, Napolitano, she's now coming out saying, oh, the cuts will make the U.S. more vulnerable to terrorist attack. I'm sorry to laugh, but this is reminding me of that episode.
Oh, well, only because it does.
You know, and so, I mean, oh my God, so now they're pulling out the we're going to be attacked card. I mean, I want the cuts not to happen either, but man.
Sharia law, get your Bible.
Oh, God. But, what happened to, I don't know if you follow this stuff or not, because I stopped, because I thought, oh, my God. Did Hagel ever get picked, or what happened to that?
Oh, no, they say that, they're saying that he'll probably pass maybe this week or something, but, no, I mean, the right wing, tomfoolery is still out there, yeah. What about Benghazi? I mean, did you see McCain lose his mind Sunday before last?
Well, yeah, that horrible David Gregory was actually trying to challenge him, and he. I thought he was.
Don't you care, David? Don't you care about four dead Americans, David?
Right. I know. I saw.
Yeah, because we know you do, John.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he the one who was napalming, you know, goops and whatever else he wants to call those people to this day. He's disgusting.
Yes, he is.
You know, horrible. I keep thinking he's going to stroke out on TV one of these days, and I'll just click the remote, I tell you.
I know. What was that line? That America was one badass mole away from having Sarah Palin be president?
Oh, God, that's right. He is the mole-removing freak show. That's right. Every other week there for a moment, right?
Yeah.
Half his face was missing. Listen, I don't care who these people are. He's a freak, and he gonna stroke out along with that complete freak show Krauthammer. That's another one. Boy.
Oh, no. That's just crazy.
Oh, no. Well, it was something else I wanted to ask you. Oh, have we spoken since... We did talk about that whole golfing thing, right, with the Keystone?
Yeah.
Has there been any follow-up on that, or it's just like, oh, well?
Well, no, I mean, 350 sent out a blast email about it. But and they do good work and everything, but the question is, you're sending it out to 350, but they're already plugged into the issue. It's this ongoing problem we have of talking to the, of preaching to the converted. Here's what came out from 350 last week. We were going to send you an inspiring video of last weekend's Forward on Climate rally, but breaking news just intervened. Reporters this morning uncovered the fact that while 40,000 or more people were outside the White House asking for his attention about Keystone XL, President Obama was playing golf with oil and pipeline executives in Florida. His staff didn't allow any pictures at the outing, blah, blah, blah. And the right wing went absolutely bananas about the no pictures part. But the fact of the matter is, there's the give Obama a pass on anything brigade, and they got nothing to say about that.
Okay, well, no, because to me, it just seems so, I don't know. I just wonder if there was any kind of follow-up. So continuing on with the nature bats last theme, this bullshit with BP is also really disturbing. It's like, oh, wait, the government keeps lowering the amounts, the money that they owe. I mean, it's just like, it's so disgusting that they're going to court over and over again, and each time, there being the possibility keeps them, they're going to pay less and less.
Well, but that's the model, isn't it, Sandra? I mean, that's certainly the model that was applied to the Exxon Valdez. It took 20 or 30 years, but eventually got the punitive damages award, which, of course, we remember punitive damages are designed specifically to punish egregiously bad conduct. They eventually got that reduced to next to nil, didn't they?
Well, see, but we're talking
and,
about...
And now the process is just sped up, and it's just expedited, and that's... Right.
Well, the latest, though, is that they, you know, they're at risk of being fined $4,000 per barrel. So, you know, we're just talking billions and billions they'd have to pay. And they're, like, attacking that clean water, you know, bill that allows them to be fined like that. And I don't know what, you know, because they're on trial. It's a BP trial in New Orleans. So it just seems like, yeah.
But naturally, to get anything out of that story, you've got to go to the foreign press.
Well, they're trying to blame Halliburton and all the sort of third-party people they dealt with. You know, anybody but them. They didn't do anything. It was an accident. You know, the whole sing it, song and dance. But
the dog ate my oil platform, yeah.
No, come on down, y'all. You know, the crayfish is, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I've seen them too. It's the best year ever in Alabama. No, it's the best year ever in Louisiana.
Right.
Uh-oh, it's Mississippi.
Oh, stop. I'm sorry. That's great, Bob. Sorry, I know I'm like, this is not good radio, but stop. That's it. Shit. Listen, I'm going to hang up. Bye. Oh, shit.
I'll see you, Sandra. Well, you've seen those ads. Oh, it's Mississippi. Oh, Jesus. And yet, you know, you shut that oyster open and the damn thing's got a... Well, damn, we're doing black pearls now. Oh, shit, it's a white pearl. That's oil. God. Okay, I'm going to get better in a minute. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Y'all better agree that it's Florida or no dessert.
Brother Albert, what's happening? Come out of the frying pan and into the fire.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. You know, you mentioned the football issue and, you know, the Oscars and you know, I just got to think, you know, like, we don't watch football in this house, and we certainly don't watch the Oscars. There was, you know, something this weekend that was kind of historic, and it's going to come out of it, maybe a little surprise for you, but if you weren't aware, a little mixed martial arts show this weekend at the UFC where they had a female champion fighting against a lesbian female challenger, and it was the main event in this sport, and I'm still waiting for that first, you know, female major league pitcher in baseball or water bottle carrier in football, or, you know, I think it's funny how
there was a line broken.
Definitely. I mean, you know, that's a really, you know, and my 9-year-olds weren't subjected to crude jokes about their age and lecherous George Clooney. You know, they got to watch and they cheered it on, you know, and, you know, go to get her at the arm bar, you know, and it was, you know, I don't know, I guess I'd rather have my girls watching that than, you know, something where at least, you know, heck, you know, you may not, you know, agree with this or that, but, you know, martial arts is it's an art, and
well, that's why it's that's martial arts.
Yeah, you know, and yeah, it's unfortunate, but, you know, it has to, you know, I mean, there's violence, but, you know, there's a heck of a lot less concussions in that sport than there are in football. You know, there's a heck of a lot, you know, and it's every sport's got problems, but it just amazes me to see that, you know, this is a sport where women are in the main event. And one of them's a gay lesbian. And, you know, there are gay, you know, and there, you know, we don't know, you know, because it's, you know, sort of like the Tebow thing. But, you know, there's a couple, there's even a champion where I suspect he's probably, you know, a bisexual. And, you know, it's really not that big of a deal. We've had plenty of, you know, gay male fighters. There's a few, more than a few female gay fighters. And, you know, it seems like that sport is, instead of being regressive, trying to maintain some sort of tradition, it's, you know, it's being expansive and inclusive. And I think that's probably why, you know, you'll see. That'll be the biggest sport in the world next to soccer here, you know, in terms of a combat sport or a fighting sport, you know. You know, it's like, are there gay soccer players? You bet. Have there been for, you know, decades? Yeah. You know, does it still have a machismo? You know, yeah, sure, and every country has it, but it's kind of, it's just such a dead end to be, you know, to be in 2013 and still be, you know, judging people on this and, like, oh, I don't want them in the locker room with me.
Well, you know, the funny thing is just historically, for instance, going back to the days of the pack, you know, the Lombardi's Packers.
Mm-hmm.
Lombardi, for as tough and crusty and hard-nosed and everything as he was, Lombardi, you know, and you know, literally, the guy went to mass every day of his life, changed the game, and as he was dying of cancer, somebody said, well, you know, you've had a great life. And Lombardi looked up at him and said, you know, I wish I had done more. And yet in Lombardi's locker room, there was a story about a player on the Packers who Lombardi at least figured out was gay and who trusted Lombardi. And some jokes started circulating, and he said, the man plays football, he plays football well, and I'm not, if the next joke I hear, the person who promulgates the joke is going to get traded. And you will not play for the world champion Green Bay Packers anymore, because I ain't going to tolerate it. Now, that's the mid to late 60s, Brother Albert. You know, there have been tons of players who came out after they left the league. So whoever that idiot was with the Niners who said, no, I can't deal with that sweet stuff. You know, chances are he's gotten up seeing stars on more than one occasion from having a hit delivered to him by that sweet stuff, as he puts it. But because of the weirdness and sick twistedness of his own mind, he can't deal with that. In fact, if you talk about that, there are issues of latency involved.
Yeah, we all know what that means. You know, he's just, you know, what are you covering up there, Mr. Haggard? You know, a couple of clips of him in there, you know, talking about the gays and marriage and how God knows your secrets. It was, you know, poignant and cutting and, you know, quite revealing. And, you know, I don't even know what Ted, I think Ted's starting another church up, by the way.
Oh, yeah, he did, right.
Just leave your nickel bags of meth in a collection plate.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one to quit from what I hear. So I'd imagine it's, I don't know. I don't know how you quit being who you are. That's probably even a tougher one, you know, you just, and I really, you know, I was disappointed with The Onion. You know, Seth MacFarlane, I mean, I saw that, like, that. I just knew it. It's like, the guy needs a animation in order to paint what he's trying to say, and he needs it as an insulation buffer for the crudeness that he does, you know, that he extols.
And see, he kept trying to make it all look like it was extemporaneous,
mm-hmm.
But if you want to get down to what's most objectionable about doing sex jokes about 9-year-old little girls,
mm-hmm.
Somebody at the Academy passed on that joke. That was an approved for public consumption joke.
Thanks.
Tells you a lot of it, right?
Yeah. They don't get my eyeballs, you know. And I'm just not going to watch it. You know, I'm not going to pay attention to it. It doesn't, you know. Maybe I'll see a few of the movies, you know, but. You know, well, let me know when Philip Seymour Hoffman's up for, you know, up for
another one.
Yeah, you know, let me.
No, actually, he was up for one last night.
Oh, see, I don't even pay attention.
Yeah, for The Master.
Oh, well, I hope so. You know, I saw, you know, that's on the list. You know, I have other things to do. I'm, you know,
that was basically him playing L. Ron Hubbard, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Now we understand why he didn't win.
That's
true. He'll be lucky if he goes to the mailbox and it doesn't have a rattlesnake in it.
Oh, yeah, or some sort of lawsuit. Him and Joe and Joaquin, whatever, Joe Quinn, weirdo. He's a good actor, though.
I like him.
It's just, as you were reading your intro today, I was sitting there, you know, and I'm over here making my own bread and getting a bottle while I have a little Lado in my lap and I'm feeding them and folding diapers that I've washed and, you know, and it just makes you laugh, you know, that I hear these football players, you know, so insecure about their own sexuality or coaches worried about some guy being gay. It's really just repugnant and so regressively primitive. It's just sickening. Yeah, I don't understand why any of that crap matters. You know, you would think in a game it matters. Well, how does he perform in the game? You know, so, you know, because it's undisclosed sources, I think just the NFL in general, until one of them gets the bollocks to step forward, they're all morons of the Monday. I'm going to give it to them all. Blah, you know, you got to do it. You know, sorry if, he's progressive, but this guy isn't. Well, then make him step up and, you know, take responsibility for his words and his bigotry. You know, I mean, I'm sick of it. And that's why, you know, that sport don't get my money and, you know, that it just won't happen. You know, I'm not going to support, you know, and there's plenty of problems I got with the UFC. I know there's probably people like sitting there talking about, oh, well, you know, he does this with the union and this with that. You know, and there's always going to be something. You know, you can't even trust anybody anymore in the onion. You're never going to agree with anything, but they're not kicking gays out for being gay or being who they are, you know, and sitting
right.
there or, you know, or going against women just because they're women. You know, now they're not making women fight men, but, you know, I'm sure Ronda Rousey could tear off a few arms at 135 pounds. In fact, I think it wouldn't even be fair. You know, I mean, she's pretty tough. You know, if you haven't seen her, you know, let's just put it like this. You're okay, Bubba. 7 first-round armbar finishes. I mean, she wants an arm, she's going to get it. You got to respect that. You know, it's like, you know, I look forward to in 20 years, you know, my daughters will remember where they were when that happened. You know, they remember watching it. In 20 years, I don't think this will be, I hope it's not a big deal. I hope it's not this, we're still talking about these issues of nonsense. Because it is nonsense, isn't it? It's just such nonsense. Over here cutting this and cutting that. Over what, just because we won't raise taxes? That's a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah, it is.
You know? And it's
but you know, it's kind of like something Ron and Raleigh pointed out a few minutes ago, Albert. He said, am I mistaken? I know I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but haven't the pig lickings been touting all these massive cuts as the panacea that the economy needs to right itself? Cutting the debt and deficit is what is needed, not revenue enhancement or job growth. The pig lickings are trying to have their cake and eat it too. And this is the important part, Ron notes, so far, it's working.
Yeah, well, Boehner got 99% of what he wanted, you know.
Yeah, and consider there you are in beautiful, magnificent, delightful, wonderful Wisconsin, and did you pay much attention to the goggle-eyed homunculus's the middle class tax cut? Yeah, his middle-class tax cut, 20% of it goes to the wealthiest 10% of Wisconsin citizens. The middle class actually gets next to nothing, which is part and parcel of why I say that we've got to eliminate the word middle class from our vocabulary and talk about working class and non-working class.
Yep. And, you know, I will say one thing. I got to say this, you know, because I do live in Wisconsin, and we're up there in taxes. I mean, I think we're only behind California and New York and New Jersey and Connecticut. You know, I mean, it's 5 or 6 or, you know, we're up there. You know, we're top 10. We have to be top 10 in taxes, at least top 10. And, you know, I mean, I know because I got my bill and, you know, I got my tax bills. I'm doing my taxes now, still waiting on the Social Security number. But, you know, we're doing these things. And I'm like, man, you know, man, that's a lot. You know, and I'll talk to friends in other parts of the country and, like, that's all you pay? And people, all they do is cry and whine and say taxes are too high? You know, it's like, you guys don't pay squat. What are you talking about? You $900? Get out of here, $900 a year. Get out of here. You're crying about that. You know, like, you have services. That's what the government does. I'm not even crying about what I pay here in Wisconsin, and it's high. My property taxes and state income.
Yeah, well, and up until Scott Walker, in large part, you were getting value for your money.
True.
I mean, yeah. I was all over frozen northern Wisconsin, and I got to tell you, I'm in love with them two-lane roads.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I invite anybody, they were all clear.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall seeing two potholes.
Mm.
Now, I'm sure they're somewhere, but I didn't see them.
Yep.
Now I can take, you know, you want to see what low taxes and low revenues get you? Come on down to West Virginia. Let me drive you down Route 3 from Beckley down into the Coal River Valley. You know, it gets to be real fun when your choice is to drive your car through a pothole that can swallow half the car, or hope that you can dodge it and get back into your lane in time not to be splattered by the monster overweight coal truck that helped contribute to the pothole in the first place.
Which doesn't pay, and then, of course, gets all the tax breaks because it provides jobs. And
job creators is what they is.
And that's the other thing. I mean, it's like, hello, a billionaire uses the infrastructure far more than you or I would ever use the infrastructure. Why is his looking back at history, you know, stop, you know, we all know it stops in January, you know, 2009. We all know about that. And then the only thing they remember after that, I mean, before that would be, you know, what's the definition of is, and, you know, Uncle Bill Slick Willie, you know, they remember him.
Oh, yeah.
And then, who else do they remember? What do the Republicans remember before that? They remember we won Korea.
Yeah, and they remember when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor.
They remember that, and they remember when that Obama invaded Poland.
Yeah, that, right.
And yeah, let me see. You don't remember? No, that FDR. That's right.
Well, no, they remember. They remember when Mr. and Mrs. Obama secretly planned to have their Kenyan Muslim socialist baby in Kenya, but to secretly hatch a plot to have him declared to have been born in Hawaii, so he could bring his Kenyan Muslim socialist revolution to America in 2008.
Mm, that's right. Yeah, they remember that.
They remember that.
And then FDR, right?
Who was a communist.
Yeah, he was a communist. But, you know, we did get, you know, in terms of the facts of the matter.
Reagan! Reagan, they remember Reagan.
Oh, that's right, Reagan.
He brought us, he made it morning in America.
Yeah, but that one's been shot down so many times. They've been
not to them, only that. Communists believe that.
I know.
He was a great American, and he never dyed his hair, and he never took his coat off in the Oval Office. He was a great American.
Yeah, he won two medals of honor in World War II.
Right, invented sliced bread.
Invented sliced bread. Yeah, he was an amazing president.
Oh, by the way, I checked on that list I was talking to Sandra about as far as the sequester is concerned.
Yeah, what happens to me?
Well, there's going to be $8.5 million less in funding for primary and secondary education. That's 120 teacher and aide jobs at risk. About 10,000 fewer students getting served. Approximately 50 fewer schools getting funding. $10.1 million will disappear in funds for about 120 teachers, aides, and staff who help children with disabilities. There will be 550 fewer work-study jobs at the colleges. Head Start disappears for 900 children in Wisconsin. $3,875,000 disappear for environmental funding. Of course, you know, Scott ain't going to miss that.
No.
base operation funding for the Army will be cut by about $1 million in Wisconsin.
That's it?
About 3,000 civilian Department of Defense employees will be furloughed, reducing gross pay by about $12.4
million.
Let's see.
We don't have a very wet spring.
Yeah, you might hope that.
Yeah, because last time we had a pretty wet spring, some of our older, you know, you said that civilian, basically Army Corps, you know, 'cause that's who you're talking about. You just mentioned those guys, right? Let's see, there was some stuff they couldn't get to, and those dams failed, and all those other breakers failed, and, we had a town wiped off the map.
You know, that's freedom. That's how you measure freedom.
That's right.
Freedom to have your town wiped off the map.
I'm talking down the road from me, Brother Bob. I mean, you know, in one of those valleys, you know, there's a couple valleys up where you remember where we're up. You know, we're kind of up on the ridge where I am, so I'm all right. But, you know, some of those valley towns, not so much. And, you know, landslides and, yeah, we don't need that. Yeah, keep going. What else we got?
Well, I don't know how much Meals on Wheels or nutrition assistance for seniors actually costs. But whatever it costs, there's going to be $653,000 less meals being delivered to old people in Wisconsin. So I say just set them out in the snow.
Like our forefathers used to.
It goes on. Let's see. Small business. Now Republicans, they're very concerned about small business, right?
Yeah, my foot. They are.
Loan guarantees for small businesses would be cut by approximately $900 million. This is nationwide.
Okay.
Then there's foodborne illness. You know how every other day we've got a story about plastic in the sausage or E. coli in the peanut butter?
Mm-hmm. Where it belongs.
Well, it tastes with electrolytes.
More molecules.
2,100 fewer food inspections will take place. But getting back to Wisconsin, $543,000 will disappear in funds to help upgrade Wisconsin's ability to respond to public health threats, including infectious diseases, natural disasters, and biological, chemical, nuclear, and radiological events. That's what Sandra was talking about, the terrorist win.
Yeah.
The Wisconsin Department of Health and, of Health Services will lose about $108,000, resulting in around 2,700 fewer HIV cases. Because, you know, what's a case of HIV among friends, right?
Exactly.
2,540 Wisconsin children will receive their vaccines for things like measles, mumps, rubella, tetanus, whooping cough, influenza, and hepatitis B. Now, that's $173,000 for those vaccines, Brother Albert.
Yeah, I know.
$173,000 protects 2,500 children from nasty-ass diseases and potential epidemic outbreaks.
And honestly, a vaccination, you know, doesn't completely protect you from never getting a disease. So even if your children are vaccinated and you happen to have a child in a class with one of those kids who isn't, who just happens to have the wrong strain or mutated a little bit in them, and then gives it to your kid's going to get mumps and measles and pox and monkey pox and everything else. Right? No? You can get it, just because you get a flu shot don't mean you're not going to get the flu. But it helps, you know? And is it that expensive? $100,000. Give me a break.
Yeah, so these Republicans, you know, including Scott Walker and including the zombie-eyed Granny Starver, they're going to balance the budget on the backs of 2,500 kids getting the measles. I mean, can we just understand that really is the essential definition of conservatism?
Yep.
F 2,500 kids getting the measles. I got mine.
You know, and that's what I mean. It's like, you know, they always take from the people who can't afford it. It's like they were getting a whole lot to begin with. And it's just, you know, and it's like, you know, they of course.
Well, obviously, that's what we really don't even have to state. This ain't going to do nothing to the, wait a minute, let me say this right. the deficit and the debt. Yeah, we have to be all ominous when we say that, or else Joe Scarborough will cry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's like it's funny too, because you know, the deficit and the debt, we're in it. It is in a hole, you know, and we all know it's all Barack Hussein Obama. You know,
it's a Kenyan Muslim. It's a Kenyan Muslim socialist anti-colonial hole.
Yeah, it's retribution. Reparations.
That's what it is. Reparations.
Reparations.
We wouldn't be in this mess if it wasn't for them damned Obama phones that George H.W. Bush invented.
Yeah, it's Obama phone. We're giving him a smartphone. That's how they got 5 million votes. Oh, I didn't get a smartphone.
By the way, you will you'll find this interesting. There are still unemployed people in Wisconsin, Brother Albert.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So, $661,000 in federal funding for job search assistance, referral, and placement is going to go away, and that translates to 23,120 fewer people getting the help and skills they need to find employment.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walker already did that when he took $150 million and gave it to tax companies, tax breaks for corporations who, I don't know what they were going to do, but just to give them, you know, because corporations need it. The Koch brothers, they need that money.
Yeah, well, they're job creators.
Yeah, and then he blamed the teachers' unions, and and then we had to go after that. And what do we do? You know, I mean, do we let it? Because there's nothing you or I can do, you know. And so I'm just sitting here. Where do I emotionally place myself? You know, I mean, yeah, I can get mad, and. You know, be mad. I can crank it back up to 11 like in the Bush years, you know. I can do that. What's that going to do? You know, I mean, do we almost say, well, you know what? All right, let's go. Let's go. You know, go ahead. Let's get some pain. You know, let's bring the pain. Because, you know, if this doesn't get rid of these Republicans, I don't know what will. It's almost like we need chemotherapy. You know, we need this traumatic, you know, disastrous policy to have, and they're going to get blamed for it, and let them take it, and, you know, I don't know, we'll still be alive, you know, I mean, what's the damage if we don't get our tax returns for a few years? You don't have it now anyway. You don't have it. Don't count on it. Just say, well, you know, I'm willing to forego it, and it's a lot of money this year, you know, but whatever it takes to get everybody back so we can have health care and, you know, we can have a future. I don't care. Well, to me, the future is, you know, priceless. And the way that these people are driving, you know, we're never going to even get to the goddamn intersection.
No, the bus is just going to sit there and idle until it runs out of fuel.
Yeah. On its side in the woods.
There, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know.
On blocks,
yeah. The tires were long consumed for to fill our bellies because we were getting hungry. It's just sick, and it's sad, and you know we all know what needs to be done, you know, and of course you know the Republicans are squeamish about, you know, but you know, heck, we need another decade or two of 90% tax rates. We need it, just like we did after the last Great Depression. You know, we have infrastructure. I mean, the infrastructure bill alone. The bill, and I'm not talking about any kind of, you know, legal bill. I'm talking about the goddamn bill that's going to be, how much it's going to cost. That bill. That thing is ridiculous. Trillion, 1.2 trillion, and then how many for, you know, 100 billion for the next, you know, yearly just to maintain it. You know, that has to get paid. If we don't have an infrastructure, we don't have no economy. Don't worry about no economy. We don't have an infrastructure. We're not going to have any burrito coverings. We're not going to have any pizzas. We're not going to have none of that. We're not going to have it because we don't have the infrastructure. So what economy? There is no economy. You know, that's why we had the economy we did in the 50s, right? It's because we were building infrastructure. We were building railroads and trains and highways and schools and everything. But now we're going to sit here and take money out of schools to pay for what? For what?
Yeah.
We already know we pay too much on military. Come on. We pay more than the top 50. You know, I ain't crying about the military base. Good. Good. We have too many people in the military. We have too many ships. We have all that shit. Mothball it. Nobody's going to mess with us. Who's going to mess with us? We still can use intelligence, and we still have drones, and we still have all this other crap, and that stuff doesn't cost a whole lot to operate, not like a battleship does, and so mothball it. You know, put the training program. Wait till it's something we can download into the brains. We don't need this crap. We need people digging ditches, building roads, building high-speed rail, putting solar panels on roofs, digging geothermal wells. I mean, these are the things, windmills, all this other stuff. You know, Al Gore's going to get mad. And we all know he's the only one that could save us, right, according to the right-wingers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know. Which is actually a Godwin law. Anytime they mention that, it's like saying Hitler in a political...
Right. Al Gore should be brought... I tend to...
Yeah, that's my thing there. I mean, I just... It's like we got to get serious. And I don't understand, you know, what is this... You know, what is austerity going to do for us?
Well, I mean, I think that's pretty much a rhetorical question at this point. Yeah. We've got a pretty good idea based on this list.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's go back for just a minute here, Albert, and think about this. With all of this looming, John Boehner took the House of Representatives, sent the House of Representatives on vacation. Can we talk about a little political strategery here?
Yeah.
If you were Nancy Pelosi, or if I were, and even though it would probably be derided as a cheap political stunt, I mean, they're drawing their pay anyway, right?
Yep, of course.
So, what would happen if the Democratic, if the Democrats, who presumably want to do something about this, all showed up and sat down at their various chairs in the House of Representatives and just sat there? I know it might smell a little bit like a sit-in, because that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Let the Capitol Police come and arrest every damn member of the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives. They go, and they're going to sit there waiting to go to work. Of course, under parliamentary procedure, they can't go to work because John Boehner has said they can't go to work.
Mm.
And they can't speak because the microphones aren't turned on. But every once in a while, one of them can stumble out into the hall and say, I'm here waiting to go to work. I'm from, let's say, Wisconsin. I'm here waiting to go to work because I don't want to see $653,000 disappear from seniors' ability to go on being food eaters.
Yeah, that food. That food stuff, you know.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Would that work?
It would work to, it would work in the mind.
I mean, I'm just thinking here, trying to think about people who could be really good at this.
The Democrats look like they're going along with it. You know, it's like it brings it into that, you know, oh, you're just trying to turn, you know, the health care, you're turning it over to the privatized. You're trying to get, you know, almost to get into that kind of conspiracy theory. When they don't act like this, this is what I want to see. I want to see some ass kicking.
Well, I mean, it was Alan Grayson who said the Republican plan for health care is to die, and if you don't die, and if you do die, die quickly.
Yep.
Can you imagine Alan Grayson walking out of the House of Representatives, out onto the steps in the late February wind, and saying, you know, I just got elected back to the House of Representatives. I'm here. I'm ready. I want to work, and I'm here because I want $1.8 million not to disappear from Florida's budget to help respond to public health threats. You know, like disease outbreaks and epidemics. Or he could say, I'm here because, you know, that pissant $653,000 to nutrition for seniors in Wisconsin we talked about? Well, Alan Grayson would get to say, I'm standing here waiting to go to work because I want to protect Florida's seniors from losing $3.8 million worth of food.
Mm.
Now, it's you and me. It's the Horn family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a workable idea.
Yep. Yeah, because,
just,
I mean,
just, get, Nancy, get on the phone, tell everybody to get their Democratic asses back to Washington and go sit in the House of Representatives and say, we're here and we're waiting to go to work.
That's right. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's almost like the Democrats, you know, heck, if the Republicans don't want to, you know, if it's like you're playing basketball in the park and the team Republican goes home with their ball, you know, to go eat burritos, well, there's no reason the Democrats have to go home. You know, if you guys want to play ball, play ball. Get practice. The more practice you do, the more you do in terms of practice, watch what happens in the game. If you don't practice, what are you going to do when the game time comes? You're going to fold. You're going to be out of breath. You'll be huffing and puffing. You know, that's what I mean. They should be practicing. They should be going. I mean, heck, if you ask me, the goddamn Congress needs to be in the Senate and everybody, you know, that should be a 365-day-a-year job every day. They should be doing it, and they should have to be there. Now, what is this 2 weeks crap? You know, what is this? I don't understand.
I mean, these guys get paid in excess of $140,000 a year to work 7 months out of the year.
Yeah, we got to raise money. It's just, I don't know. I wish they would do what you say. You know, that would be awesome. You know, that would actually, you know, that would be great for the public to see.
Well, sometimes symbolism matters.
Yeah, and it would shame those Repiglins.
Now, could you get the for-profit media to get the microphones and cameras up there?
Andy
just wrote in and he said, back last summer when the Republicans were refusing to lift the ceiling on the deficit, Representative John Boehner happily explained when the sequester deal was cut, he got 98% of what he wanted. Not 99%. He said, I just heard the tape. It's on tape. It's strange how the Republicans distance themselves from the deal now when it was everything they wanted. Mr. Obama again showing the guy cannot hold the line on anything, and the corporate media showing a pro-hard right bias. Evidently, they can't find the tape. Yeah, and says Andy, let's up the taxes on the top 1%. Can anyone start the negotiating at 100% for the top bracket? And at this point in time, I think it's called for.
It is.
Really? I mean, David Gregory's a millionaire.
At least.
Bob Schieffer's a millionaire. George Snuffleupagus is a millionaire. We've got to do something about the debt. We're going to do something. Because somewhere somebody told them that it was a smart thing to say that you're worried about the debt and the deficit. But really, am I supposed to understand that David Gregory is willing to solve the debt crisis on the back of a septuagenarian woman who relies on food subsidies for her ability to be a food-eating human? Because if that's where we are, Brother Albert, we're done. We're done. This isn't a country anymore. It's not anything that my father would recognize having gone off to the Second World War to fight over. It's not something he would recognize having seen his big brother planted in the dirt over. We're so worried about a deficit that Dick Cheney said not 10 years ago didn't matter in the first place, that we are willing to let our elders, our grandmothers and our grandfathers, the repositories of our wisdom, we're willing to let them go hungry because the deficit?
And Jesus. Yep.
No, you know, theoretically, according to the words in that book they love but never read, he wouldn't be on board with this.
You sure?
Well, maybe in the conservative Bible he is.
Yeah.
Supply side Jesus is down with it.
Yeah, exactly. Republic Jesus. With his
take up your M16 and follow me, Jesus is down with it.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
But you know, the guy who turned loaves and fishes into feeding 5,000 moochers, no, he wouldn't be down with it.
Moochers indeed.
Jesus. I hope I haven't woke up little Lito with all this hollering and carrying on.
Oh no, I fed him and burped him and he's right back to sleep. He's a good baby.
Oh.
He's such a good baby. He smiles. He sees me. Big old beaming smile. He's a beauty. He's such a little handsome. But see, it's like, you know, I look at this world that, you know, I don't know. I want him coming in, you know, growing up in a just world and a more fair world. You know, and I hated hearing that when I was a kid. That was the one line I used to hate. You know, it's not fair. You know, well, life isn't fair. And to me, you know, like, I get it. You know, there are there's parts of life that aren't fair. You know, and there's parts, you know, you just can't do anything about it. But that doesn't mean that has to be the rule. That's what we have to base civilization on. That, you know, like, you know, our civilization should be, you know, one of its driving forces should be making things more fair, making life more fair, you know, not making it this, you know, the thing I never understand, and I never will. I don't care how much money even I have. You know, you got billions and billions of dollars. You know, if they would survive, they would still survive with 100% tax for 10 years. They would still be the richest people on the planet at the end of the decade. They would still be the richest.
Sure.
And they wouldn't starve. Oh, maybe to cut corners and not go too deep into their, you know, coffers of, you know, they don't want to get that, the giant bank they swim in, you know, they don't want to get it too low. You know, they still like making those high dives into that money. But, you know,
I like money.
Yeah, I like money and, you know, maybe they can only afford one driver. You know, and only two chefs. And, you know, maybe the cleaning person, the people, you know, they only have to be three of them instead of 10 of them. And they only have to clean, you know, 6 days a week instead of seven. You know, it's like funny. If you haven't seen that film, to really see how just, ugh, The Queen of Versailles. Have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh, it's on Netflix. Watch it. The Queen of Versailles. And what it's about is, I forget the guy's name. He's some billionaire, you know, freaking Bush fan who, you know, he was always threatening to lay off his employees if that Obama got into office, and he thinks he got Bush elected, and he was building the 90,000 square foot house. If you haven't seen it, watch it. And, you know, it's so funny. It's like, you know, next thing you know, the rich lady, she's always shopping all over, spending money. That's what she does. She's a trophy wife, you know, and you know, eventually they couldn't get money for this, and they couldn't do this, and all this money was expensive, and, you know, all their money is, you know, wherever it is, you know, it's not, you know, like they have, you know, cash in their pocket. It's all tied up in investments and this and that. So it's like, he keeps yelling at her about spending money, and so, you know, she's like, in order to save money, she goes on a shopping spree to Walmart.
Oh, I know what this film is. Yeah.
Yeah. Watch it, and you can just see how gross it is. You know, they got all these little dogs, little piles of poop all over the place, and, you know, they just, you know, it's like they're Harkonnen, you know. They can't, no matter how much money they have, they can't buy the class. You know, they just can't. You know, he sits there in his office, in his TV, you know, eating dinner away from his family, you know, piles of books and crap all over the place. It's you know, it's like, you know, they're miserable. And so, yeah, of course they're going to, I'm paying more for that, I'm not paying for these people, and be mooching off me. And it's just, it's really exposes wealth for the carcinogen that it is. The avarice is just such a, it's the cancer of civilization, avarice. You know, I mean, apathy is the heart disease, and that's what we got to deal with. You know, we got to deal with, you know, we got to make sure we turn out in this midterm here. We can't let these Tea Party, you know, regressive troglodytes emerge again and gain even more ground, or keep people like Walker in and whoever else. You know, these guys got to go. I mean, they just, you know, they're just toxic, you know. I mean, heck, the Tea Party, they're calling, they can't wait. They want to re-recruit, what's his name again? What's that guy? West.
Alan West. Oh, sure.
Really? Yeah, okay. Right, we need that guy back. You know, it's like you got Rubio, you got little McCarthy from Texas, you got all these other people. Just, and you want this guy. I never even heard a sensible thing ever come out of that guy's mouth. You know what I mean? But he's that, you know, to them, he represents that, oh, I'll stick a gun in his mouth. And, where's the bomb? He's that kind of guy, you know. He's the Jack Bauer of the of Washington, I guess. That's who they think he is. And, you know, they love that. They love that imagery. You know, that makes that tough guy imagery. You know, walking around the shopping center with your loaded 15. That's right. Yep, just walking around.
Yep.
Wrapped in my back.
Just protecting freedom.
Yep. Yeah, that's the only, like, shall not be infringed. We're part of this you don't understand. Well-regulated, we're part of you don't understand. You know, it's like, you guys are just, you know, they love payola. They pick and choose Jesus. They pick and choose everything. They you know, if they couldn't pick and choose, forget it. You know, that's what they want. They want the buffet world. You know, and... You know, they don't care if someone else would like a piece of chicken, or someone else would like a piece of watermelon, or someone else would like corn on the cob, or anything else. You know, it's all for them. You know, because stuff is delicious, and they want it, and so they take it all. And it's like, you know what I mean? You've been to buffets, and, you know, some items just get swept right off the buffet line. You know, you got to wait for them.
Like it's never, like there will never be any more.
Yeah. Like, you know, like I have to have 10 pieces, because if I don't have 10, you know, I'm not getting what I paid for. You know, but how many can you eat?
You know, I have to interrupt just long enough, Brother Albert, to tell you this is a handy dandy word that comes in handy. Mm-hmm. My colleague and buddy Rick Smith, who follows me on the horn here, mm-hmm. has a word for those places. It's a trough.
A trough. Oh yeah. It's a trough. Well, that's what they think this country is, don't they? It's a feeding trough.
Yeah, and if you've ever been around swine, you know that they do that. The ones who really, really are serious about it get their front feet in the trough.
Mm-hmm.
But you know you're dealing with a repig-licking swine when you see them struggling to get the rear trotters in, and that's where we are.
Uh huh. Oh yeah.
You know the repig-lickings even under the oppressive taxation of that sex maniac, Bill Clinton. even though we lived through that to fight again, it ain't enough. We had our front feet in the trough then under that communist. But by God, now we can take... It tastes so much better when all four trotters is a-standing in it. Right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, you can see it. That's how they are. They want.
Because then, once you got all four trotters in, then you can turn sideways and can't nobody else get to the trough.
That's right. Exactly. Because what's a feeding frenzy if you got to share?
Yeah.
You know, and then you know if you got all feet in there, you could bite someone. You know, you could bite whoever else sticks their. Meager snouts into there, just get a little bite. You know, and they don't understand, you know, it's not, you know, they're shameful. They're just disgusting. You know, I don't understand where this greed comes from. You know, I don't understand that, you know, you can't take this with you.
You know what, I have to share something with you, because you just triggered it by saying, I don't know where this greed comes from. Every now and then, I read a lot of serious stuff. Now, this is not saying I'm some sort of thinker or uber intellectual. The day that I come on and start telling people how, you know, start having to have right-wingers on to prove how damn smart I am as a progressive, well, that's the day I'm going to hang up my earphones and walk away.
Oh, it would be fun to listen to every now and then, Brother Bob.
No. It'd just be... Because then I'd have to bring... You know, we don't have any plumbing back here. I'd have to install a shower. I'd have to play two songs while I took a shower. Now, it'd be because I'd feel so icky. But anyway, every now and then I get hold of some rather light fare. And a good, light, humorous book comes in at about the price of going to a movie. But I wind up getting 12 or 14 hours enjoyment out of it because, you know, I'm kind of slow that way. I have to put my finger under the words and my lips move and everything. And it even slows down more because every now and then I'll start cackling And Agnes will look at me and go, all right, what was it? Start reading. And then I have to back up 8 pages so she gets the context. So I spent a part of Saturday reading a new book that's out from Dave Barry. And it's called Insane City. And I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but sweet Jesus, it's hilarious. And like I said, I don't want to give anything away except to say, what might happen if a billionaire, a real power player, mind you, got hold of some medical brownies and didn't necessarily know he had?
Mm.
It is worth it. Because, like I said, I sat there, and Agnes got the benefit of a whole bunch of but because I had to read it. It is... But it's worth thinking about because it seems all lighthearted and everything, but then when you realize that, and he puts these words in the character's mouth that make you go, yeah, really, no kidding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's this little wealth epiphany. Meanwhile, the rich guy who never got a brownie remains an intransigent asshole.
Yeah.
For anybody, you know, if you want, you know, a good 6-8 hours of entertainment, if you don't have to expand it to 14 or 16 because you wind up having to read it out loud, I highly recommend it. It's darn good fun.
What is it called?
Insane City by Dave Barry, Barry.
Insane City. That sounds, yeah, I was going to say, Bill Hicks, may peace be upon him, said, not only should it be legal, it should be mandatory.
There you go. Exactly.
Shut up and smoke that. It's the law.
It's the law.
It's the law. Yeah, hang on.
Yeah, but we're going to have a lot easier time getting mandatory carry laws in the U.S. than we're going to get a mandatory doobie law.
Yeah. Well, they want that, too, because make you safe.
Yeah, but see, I still remember that old recording called A Child's Garden of Grass, where rule one was games with guns and knives are not advisable. Smoke that. It's the law.
It is the law. It's just, you know, they need this perspective. You know what I mean? And Bill Gates is there, and you know Richard Branson's there, and there's a bunch of them. You know, there's a lot of billionaires, you know, rich billionaires that are there with this stuff. You know, they're giving away half their wealth when they're alive, and that's a wonderful thing, and that should be applauded. It should be, you know, obligations that.
If they were really giving that away.
Yeah, I know.
There's some dodges in the tax code, but we don't.
I'm sure there is, but, you know, I think it should be, you know, when you have that level of wealth, you know, and I say to my friends, I said on the horn, you know, no one should have a nuclear weapon. No one person should have that kind of power. And it's the same thing with billions of dollars. You know, it's too much power. I mean, look at what Sheldon Adelson, you know, I mean, God, that guy, what he needs is one of those hover belts, you know, but he gives so much money to, you know, to McCain and Newt Gingrich and all these other guys that he's got to walk around one of those little rascal scooters. And a man of his wealth should, you know, be draped in robes and in a hover belt. And,
right, or carried aloft on a palanquin, you know, by several loyal servants who could double as bodyguards. Sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yes, I mean, yeah, it just, you know, I don't understand. I just don't get it, and I don't understand how they think it's like. In fact, you know, I mean, it's like they've infected our culture with, you know, and I think it's starting to whittle away. I think its luster is starting to, you know, to wane, but it's still there, and it's like, you know, to have this wealth is, you know, it's like a. It's like, for, you know, there's so many people that support it. It's like, it'll never be attainable for you. It's impossible for you and you and you and you and you and you to get that kind of money. You know, it happens. You know, yes, it does happen. You know, people get struck by lightning. Bill Gates is in the right place at the right time. He does the right thing at the right time. But you're not Bill Gates. Maybe you are. Go be Bill Gates then. All right, I am. All right, what are you doing? Well, you know, got to go to my job. Oh, so where's your Bill Gates plan? You know, Bill Gates was, you know, over here doing a computer and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, you know, that's what I mean. You know, it's like if we don't sit here and do, you know, that's the other thing, too. You know, I thought government, you know, how are we going to lose 750,000 jobs if government doesn't create jobs? That's the one thing that I'm perplexed about, Brother Bob.
Well, but that's only because you're trying to apply rational thought to it, brother.
Oh, yes. You know, I government never created a single job. Yeah, not one ever. You know,
I know.
It doesn't create jobs. It doesn't build the internet. It doesn't build the highways. It doesn't build. You know, government loses money. Government's not a business, you idiots. It's just so sick.
No, but see, that's part of what stuck from George W. Bush. I want to be president because I want to run America like a business, like my good friend Ken Lay over to the Enron.
Enron, yeah.
He said it. That ain't no joke, just because of the funny voice. No, he did. He ran America like a business. He ran America like Enron. And we're, you know, some woman in Wisconsin or Florida or West Virginia who, some older senior citizen man who would like to have dinner 2 weeks from now is going to pay the price. Remember when the Enron goons giggled about how they were going to get all of Granny's pension when they were jacking up gas prices, natural gas prices, was it? Yeah.
No, it was kilowatt hours.
Was it?
Kilowatt. Yeah, they were shipping out electricity, and that's what they were broke
on the free market.
Yep, and that's part of why California got into the hole they got into, you know, because they were giving them, you know, $1,000 a kilowatt hour for the state, and that, you know, at least from my understanding, Enron, you know, that put them in that, you know, $2 billion hole that they were in, which is now, of course, you know, the Terminator made it even bigger. And, you know, that's what's funny, though, you know, but at the end of that, what happens? You kill yourself, you know, because you're such a deplorable scumbag. You got to go shoot yourself in a car park somewhere, you know, and that's what happened with these Enron guys. And not all of them, I'm sure there's some of them. So there's got to be a few of them sitting on a beach somewhere. But I don't know how you, you're the one that's got to look in the mirror, you know, and these people are cannibals. And, you know, you got to think, you know, you look in the mirror as a cannibal. I don't know. Like, to me, that would be the worst thing. That would be, like, the worst life that I could think of. It's like, hey, you ate flesh, you know, you like it, and that's what you do. You know, like, the conscience, the barrier they have on that is just, you know, astounding. I don't know how anybody can sleep at night knowing that they eat people and that they're going to force, you know, gray-haired people, their grandparents and their, you know, the generation's grandparents to eat cat food, you know, or if they can even afford cat food. Cat food's getting expensive, you know. I mean, because if you're going to eat cat food, you're going to want to eat at least something that looks halfway human edible, right, like a fancy feast or the pate thing with the little shrimps on top. And that's like 80 cents.
Yeah, those aren't shrimps. Those are sea monkeys, okay?
Whatever. Yeah, big sea monkeys. Whatever they are, you know. I mean, that stuff, you know, if I was going to eat cat food, that'd be the cat food I'd go after, because at least I can identify something in it. You know, I mean, but that's, you know, I mean, and here's the thing. Is it so much? It's so much you have to cut it? Really? Really? That's what it's just disgusting to me. You know, like, oh, vaccines and food for old people and teachers. That's what you cut? That's the government waste for you? That's, well, it all adds up.
Well, that's part of the 98% that they wanted, Brother Albert.
I know, yeah. Exactly. They wanted to cut
food for seniors. They wanted to make sure there were less teachers. They wanted to make sure there was less money for environmental protection. They wanted to make sure that there were less vaccinations because, you know, fluoride.
You see, do they even have a plan? Or do they just have the mission?
Well, they do have a plan. The plan is to make the government so small you can drown it in a bathtub, and then the plan is to go ahead and drown it in a bathtub.
Yeah, but then what?
Well, then freedom.
Oh, and Jesus. Okay.
Frisbees? Wheat checks?
Yeah, I just...
Ayn Rand will rise from the grave, her moldy old hand... her hairy old cheek waiting to be kissed by Ron and Rand?
Yeah, assault weapons at the grocery store and hyenas on a chain and a muzzle in the town square. And
yeah, and every job creator creates jobs by having by increasing the size of his personal militia bodyguard.
Yes. Yeah, good.
See
plan.
How it works?
Yeah, that sounds like a. Is that a,
and then they get control of the Obama re-education camps, which they are not going to shut down. Sci-fi novel called Altered Carbon by Richard K. Morgan. The personal has ever, and there's going to be some dirty words in here, so little Timmy, little Cindy, out of the room. Uncle Bob will be done in a minute. The personal, as everyone's so fucking fond of saying, is political. So if some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here. It is slow and cold, and it is theirs, hardware and soft. Only the little people suffer at the hands of justice. The creatures of power slide out from under with a wink and a grin. If you want justice, you will have to claw it from them. Make it personal. Do as much damage as you can. Get your message across. That way you stand a far better chance of being taken seriously next time, of being considered dangerous. And make no mistake about this, being taken seriously, being considered dangerous marks the difference, the only difference in their eyes, between players and little people. Players they will make deals with, little people they liquidate. And time and again, they cream your liquidation, your displacement, your torture, and brutal execution with the ultimate insult that it's just business. It's politics. It's the way of the world. It's a tough life, and it's nothing personal. Well, fuck them. Make it personal. I need to find a calligrapher, a really good calligrapher, and get that done in calligraphy and frame it and hang it here in the studio. Altered Carbon. The beginning of chapter 15 by Richard K. Morgan. Now the question is, how does a septuagenarian who won't get to eat because John Boner got 98% of what he wants, how does a septuagenarian get taken seriously in this utterly dysfunctional state? Now, this is not a call to arms. This is not to the barricades. This is, nobody's getting any marching orders. Because not getting to eat food, it doesn't get much more personal than that. Obviously, the Paul Ryans and the John Boners and the Steve Kings and the Michelle Bachmans and the Louis Gohmerts and on and on and on, they take it personally because they are personally offended when Granny eats food. They really are. And consequently, they have affected policies to try to do something about all that godforsaken, useless eating that Granny is doing. How does Granny make it personal? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Hi, it's Mike from here.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. It might be a little loud in the background. I'm home with my two boys, and they're in the middle of a bath.
Oh, that happens. It's okay. Yeah. You're coming through loud and clear.
Okay, good. If there are, like, loud shrieks, don't panic, and, you know. they're having fun, but they tend to be a little loud. Hey, I wanted to tell you, I met with Mike Kelly's district office representative today.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. I don't know if I told you about the letter to the editor that I wrote about him.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it definitely got a response. And he agreed to meet me, and he's the director of... he said he directs every one of his district offices, and we met for lunch today, and... I came prepared. I sent him the link to the ACAC website last night. And, you know, I said, we only have a half hour to talk because that's all I get for lunch. So you know, it might help if you read over some of this. And he actually came with a couple of the studies printed out, highlighted, that he had read through. And then, hold on, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I printed out the 8 flyer, you know, that just sort of describes what it is.
Right.
As well as the summary of all 23 studies. And I went in and highlighted some of the, you know, the facts that really popped out to me. And, you know, you've advised when talking to Republicans to present it as a pro-life issue, not an environmental issue, and an economic issue. And that's what I did. And I don't know if he was just being polite and playing me or what, but he didn't really seem to know a ton about the issue. He asked some questions about, you know, well, how many people does this employ? How long have they been doing it? Some of the questions I didn't know the answer to, but I know you've said it's not a ton of, you know, most coal mining in West Virginia, at least, is still underground, you know, so we're not talking about this employing a lot of people. And he really seemed to kind of buy the whole it's a pro-life human rights issue. And then he asked me a question that I did not know the answer to, but I wanted to throw this out to you. He was wondering if there were any, like, sportsmen's groups that have gotten on board with this, because when I told him about NPR burying valleys and streams,
mm-hmm.
the first thing he said was, I bet a lot of trout streams are affected. What do fishermen have to say about that?
Nobody has formally signed on, but we've done outreach work.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if we were able to maybe get somebody like Trout Unlimited involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've taken fairly strong stands on stuff like this over the years.
Yeah.
But it is true. One of the few things we do have here when the streams aren't poisoned is native brook trout. And if you want to have a hell of a good time with it, I'm sorry, I hope the kids didn't hear that. If you want to have a heck of a good time with the with a fishing pole, go fishing for native brookies. Because it's an adventure. It really, really is. But I'm glad that he noticed that.
And I mean, I had never thought of it, but just the fact that he brought it up, you know, made me think, wow, this is different. It was not the reaction I expected from a Republican, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, if they want to bring up the jobs thing, it's worth noting that this doesn't affect anybody's job because existing permits continue being worked.
Oh yeah. I didn't mention that. Crap.
Existing permits can it just puts a moratorium on new permits.
New permits and expanding
ones,
right?
Right.
Yeah. Well,
so people who are working are going to continue working, and mountaintop removal is not a labor intensive practice. There are maybe 4,000 or less mountaintop removal workers in the state.
Yeah.
I mean, in West Virginia, there are more teachers, there are more nurses, there are more cops, there are more florists.
Right. And I did make sure to make the point that normal mountaintop removal operation can employ a fraction, and this is how I put it in, you know, we're talking about a fraction of the people who work underground. The district that Mike Kelly represents has a couple of traditional underground coal mining companies.
Mm-hmm.
None of which that I know of are connected to NPR, or they're not the big ones. They're not like Massey and Arch. He named a couple and a couple I know of, and they're all tiny, you know, like family operations. And he seemed to be really sensitive to how, you know, it would be perceived by them. Because one of the things he said a couple of times was, you know, I know a lot of the operators in southwestern Pennsylvania are very environmentally conscious, and it's all underground. And I said, yeah, this doesn't really affect them.
It doesn't affect them at all, even remotely.
This is not old-fashioned underground coal mining, which is still the majority of coal mining in the area. This is just this process that employs way fewer people and has much worse public health effects, you know?
Yeah.
Another thing he said, and I don't know if you've heard of this group, but he gave me information on something called the Northeast Midwest Institute. And I'm reading from the website printout he gave me. It's a Washington-based private, nonprofit, and nonpartisan research organization dedicated to economic vitality, environmental quality, and regional equity for Northeast and Midwest states. And he said one of the things they focus on is water quality and sustainable water development.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was sure to point out the study on stream quality and human cancer effects and all that. He said he's going to forward all the information on to them and see if they want to take it up. So I don't know if that's helpful to you or not at all. But
I'll go have a look. I'll look them up and have a look at their website.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. He told me he would. He told me he'd get back to me within a week or so. So, and I'm going to kind of hold him to that. I'm going to do a follow-up, a really polite follow-up email in a week or two and, offer any more information he needs. So I guess we'll see what comes of it.
Well, Mike, let me say right off the bat that we really appreciate your advocacy, because this is where the difference is made. And my word, if we could bring somebody like him on board, it would be a huge, huge moment.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and he asked if any Republicans had signed on already, and I said, I don't think so.
No, you can always say we're talking to some.
Yeah. Well, and I was sure to say, I'd love if Mike Kelly would be the first. I'm not afraid to just ask for it. Buddy, what's the matter? I think I got to get this guy out of the back, so I'm going to let you go, but I wanted to update you.
Well, I appreciate it. I really, really do.
Hey, no problem. You have a good night.
All right. See you, Mike. Bye now.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I love that. Bath time. We just shared bath time with Mike, who in the course of bath time also took time to let us know what it's like to go out and do some real-world advocacy on the AIC Act. Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, AIC Act.org, ACHEACT.org. You can go there and you can prepare yourself, and you can even go to the district office of your member of Congress and take them and do the same thing Mike did. Take them the information, explain it to them. You can even, as a constituent, sit down and take a meeting if you have the time. You can take a meeting and say, listen, this matters to me. It matters a lot. And then when you do that, we'll follow up. I'll probably be going back to D.C. for a couple of weeks here fairly soon. We will continue broadcasting from there. But, yeah, I'll probably go back to D.C. fairly soon. And we'll follow up with Representative Kelly, and we'll follow up with your representative when you let us know that you've taken action. And remember, there's a functionality on the website, ACAC.org, where you can stay right on the webpage and go and send a letter to your member of the House or your senator. Remember, we're looking to get the thing introduced for the first time in the Senate as well. Let's go back to the phones. Phone lines open, 304-658-3333. A little bit of time left in the program this evening. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Jump right in, but let's see who's there now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Juanita from Columbus, Ohio.
Well, hey, Juanita. Good to hear from you.
Well, I haven't been able to listen as much because I moved. Of course, I only moved about 4 miles away from where I used to live. But, gosh, Bob, it broke my back. Everything hurts.
The moving, in many ways, moving is like having a house fire.
Oh God, it was awful, and the weather was bad, and the movers were late, and all that kind of everything that could have possibly went wrong. But anyway, I just briefly wanted to touch on. I'm going to talk about something shallow, even though following up with Mike's call of his advocacy doing something so important, and then I'm going to go back and talk about Seth MacFarlane. I just wanted to say that, look, Seth MacFarlane, his whole product, whether it's Family Guy, American Dad, and even the Cleveland Show. It's very chauvinistic, very misogynistic type humor. And
It's a very mean kind of humor.
It is. And feminists have been on McFarlane for some of the things that he's done on the show, you know. And on his, with, you know, with Family Guy and American Dad. However, this is something new in comedy where, like you said, it's this so-called hipster kind of comedy, but basically it seems to be a backlash of against feminism, maybe, even a backlash of racism. And, so these guys sort of have reframed, misogyny and racism and made it, you know, pretty acceptable. And, in comedy. And I think probably Howard Stern, may have been the genesis of a lot of that. Because you have progressives, you know. I mean, I've gotten into arguments with progressive men who swear up and down that Howard Stern is a progressive. And his product is anti-female, anti-gay, and let's see, what is the other? And racist. Those are the three things that he, you know, I remember one time hearing one of his shows, and he had downloaded songs from a white supremacist site and was playing them.
Oh, gee whiz.
And you know, so this is something that has come up in... and I would say in the late 80s and 90s, and let's see, the other one would be Andrew Dice Clay. That was another one that came out of that era. And even black comedians, for example, you take Chris Rock. Chris Rock does a shtick. And it was on HBO where he talks about how he loves black people, but he hates ends. And so he goes on this.
Yeah, that drives me crazy, too.
And that is exactly, if you go to any racist site, you will find stuff that matches exactly what he says.
Well, see, I remember, Juanita, when the late Senator Robert Byrd,
yes,
said on Fox News, "My mama always taught me that there was black N words and white N words."
That's right.
Well, that's bull.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think they, you know, a lot of people just don't get it. Now, for example, Rush Limbaugh, most, again, his stuff is racist, sexist, homophobic, and if you put him, you know, beside Howard Stern, their shtick is kind of exactly alike. Now, when I tell that to progressives, they, oh no, 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 no. But surprisingly, Harry Shearer, you know, the comedian Harry Shearer,
absolutely.
He said that there's virtually no difference between Stern and Rush Limbaugh. And I will even go further and say rappers. Rappers are conservative, Bob, because they are misogynistic.
Now, let's put a caveat on that, Juanita, because I guess I would say that there is a commercialized product that involves a lot of talk about, well, I don't even want to use the words. I find it so degrading and so demeaning. And that seems to sell. And it sells,
yes,
it sells across racial lines.
It does.
I don't think that, you know, I don't think there's anything more ridiculous than seeing a white guy affecting, rap cool or whatever. It just it completely separates it from the organic roots from which the genre arose. But
exactly.
But you know, there's also work done in the genre. Jesus, I sound like William F. Buckley. There's also work done in the genre that is decidedly more socially relevant, and that does not utilize that stuff. So I think we can sort of cull the herd, if you will, by talking about the for-profit aspect of it. Now, if you want to be highly profitable, you're going to have to throw the N-bomb around, and you're going to have to talk about your B-words and your hoes. And there's a certain, and again, this stuff has really, really deep roots that you could wear yourself out trying to analyze, because it goes to a presupposed, pre-approved conduct from within the white power structure. Well, yeah, because see, when you get that kind of stuff, then white folks could say, well, see, they behave like that.
Well, if you go and look at. There is a Warner Brothers cartoon. It's still on. It's online. And it's called Coal Black, C-O-A-L Black, and the Seven Dwarfs. And Seven is spelled S-N-E-B-B-D-E-N, I think it is. And you look at that, Bob, and see if you don't recognize caricatures that you will see today. Cole Black is the voice is being done by Dorothy Dandridge, who was an African American movie star of the 50s, and I don't know when she died. I think she may have died in the 60s. She had a tragic death, very similar to Marilyn Monroe. And so she is Coal Black, and she is getting ready for the prince. And when the prince shows up, now this was in the 40s, he has a fur coat on, gold teeth,
of course,
and tires with white the white sidewall tires, and Coal Black's mother is fat, and she's laying on a couch or something, and she's got gin bottles around her feet, and it's just stunning to me how, you know, I can see the same old stereotypes that are being perpetuated over and over and over again. I mean, just like Sandra mentioned Precious. Well, again, you know, and that goes back to that. Precious is still in my opinion, just another derivative of Mammy. I mean, it's that same large black woman that, you know, really got, the movie Gone with the Wind with Hattie McDaniel really propelled that stereotype. And we can't get rid of it. And I see that character on commercials. I see that character in comedies, all of the comedies, starting in the 70s, whether it was Good Times, That's My Mama, What's Happening. They all had that large, large woman.
Well, let's not forget Madea.
Oh, Lord. Oh, God. Oh, God. That's, you know. So, yeah, I didn't watch the Academy Awards last night. I've never watched them, Bob. I did see part of the Academy Awards when Michael Moore, I think he won for Bowling for Columbine, and I saw that part. But I've never watched the Academy Awards. You know, Hollywood, I guess I have a kind of a split personality when it comes to Hollywood. I can enjoy some of their products, and then a lot of their products I don't enjoy. They perpetuate stereotypes. They give Americans a view of themselves that's false. You know, and I'm amazed at how many people that I talk to use movies as reference. They don't reference a book.
Oh, I'm notoriously and repeatedly guilty of that on this program, Juanita.
but it has had, Hollywood has a major, major effect on how we think, as Americans. And, you know, I have friends who are broke, poor. And they love to watch shows like that propagate wealth. And they love the Academy Awards. Oh, I want to see what they have on. So-and-so has $5 million shoes on, or $5 million diamond and crystal shoes on. You know.
And there is a little bit of that for us here. Jennifer Lawrence, Jennifer Lawrence tripped on her gown on the way up to the stage to take Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing Agnes said, you know, look at how beautiful her gown is.
Oh yeah.
And you know, there's an aesthetic quality to that, Juanita, but there's also a rubbing the proles nose in it too. The consumption is so conspicuous. And the fact of the matter is, the jewelry, you know, we all know by now that those are loaners.
Yeah.
They're not even, in large part, they're not even affordable by the fairly well-paid actresses who wear them. The fact of the matter is, those are walking advertisements to the 1% by the people who service them. Now, I have a profound respect for artistry, and craftsmanship, but let's understand that wherever that, you know, those $5 million shoes came from, those things will be sold, and they'll probably be sold to some sultan, for a member of his harem, or they will be sold to some other form of predator. And yeah, there's definitely a downstream effect that'll be great for the jewelry, you know, the house jeweler, and somewhere down the road, maybe some of it, and this is the maybe part of trickle down economics. Maybe it'll trickle down to the guy who or the woman who actually did the work to create the jewelry.
Yeah.
Because, for instance, to say, well, you know, those are her lovely hat came from the House of Whoville. Well, the House of Whoville is owned by a corporation now, and it has no more independent personal reality than any other corporate structure does. But there are people involved with them, and that's where we get into, I guess, the philosophical shifting sands. Now, Ron and Raleigh just wrote a couple of minutes ago, Juanita, and he said racism as hip. He said, Seth MacFarlane, Don Imus, the two louts that produce South Park, Howard Stern, and a plethora of others have made snarky racism acceptable. And then he adds as a P.S., rappers are misogynistic and homophobic. All you have to do is listen to the late Notorious B.I.G. rapping about killing and dismembering a gay man, and you've heard all you need.
Yeah, and that's why I say that philosophy or ideology is conservative, because they're anti-gay, anti-female, and they're racist, because they call their own people by the most vulgar names. So I, you know, I...
And frankly, can we put a little historical context into that? That goes back to slavery days.
Of course.
You know, if you there was field and house. Mm-hmm. And that's if you right. were in the field, you despised. I don't mean you.
That's true.
If one was in the field, one despised the house. And to be a house comes down today in the same vein as an Uncle Tom.
Exactly.
And it's born of issues and perceptions of privilege.
This is true, but I think if you know, I don't know how the problem can be solved because the media is so very powerful, and you know, it, even you know with women as well, the stereotypes of women, they're so powerful until women actually believe this is the way, you know, women are to behave. And in the so I don't know how, we don't have media education in America, at least not, you know, on a middle school or high school level. And so, you know, people believe television. They really, really believe what's on television. And this sort of thing of worshiping the wealthy, we've always kind of had it, but it really took off when that guy from England started that show called, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
Robin Leach, yes. We looked for the most expensive bowl of soup in the world. We found it in Tokyo. Snake urine soup, beloved of the sumo wrestlers.
And from that point on, it's like we, you know, it's like we just, I don't know. And there's something about watching wealthy people that has a hypnotic effect on some people.
And always has. I think always has.
You know, they said that...
I mean, consider Edward Arlington Robinson's poem, Richard Cory, in which he... that's what, early 20th century, late 19th century. And he's... reflecting on the way that people respond to wealth. It was 1919 it was published, and he says, it's a very short poem. He says, whenever Richard Cory went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean-favored and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed, and he was always human when he talked. But still, he fluttered pulses when he said, good morning. And he glittered when he walked. And he was rich, yes, richer than a king, and admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. So on we worked, and waited for the light, and went without the meat, and cursed the bread. And Richard Cory, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head.
Mm.
That was 1919. That was at, the World War had ended, and the robber barons had had America in its clutches for a generation, and it was about to really take off in the excesses of the 1920s.
Right.
And Edward Arlington Robinson saw it and responded, that's how he responded. I don't think he was trying to get us to be sympathetic to Richard Cory.
Right.
But rather to understand that there is a distinct difference between our perceptions and realities. But
yeah.
the thing that we have now in the second decade of the 21st century, Juanita, I think, is that we now have a celebrity culture that not only revels in showing us wealth that we are told we would like to emulate, but now also shows us the excesses and what happens And we revel and we celebrate. I mean, I remember when Paris Hilton got busted and when Lindsay Lohan gets busted. And this whole idiotic country gets up in a frenzy doing everything short of yelling, crucify them.
Yes.
So, you know, and you know, that's a counter manifestation of the idea of equal justice under law, which again is one of those things like democracy that is aspirational for us and has never, ever, ever, ever been a reality in this country.
Oh, yes. Well, Bob, I know we're running out of time, but I just want to ask you one quick question, if I can, and it's about abortion. Now, each state has a civil rights commission, right? Like West Virginia has a state civil rights commission. Am I correct?
Some manifestation, yeah.
Ohio has the Ohio Civil Rights Commission. Well, some of these laws that these Republicans are passing are against women's bodies, and since it's only against women, they're not passing reproduction laws against men. I mean, isn't that discrimination against women? I mean, couldn't a childbearing woman just simply go to her state and file a civil rights complaint against the Republican Party or whichever lawmaker put the is trying to get the law passed? I mean, because it seems they are targeting women because they're women. That's discrimination.
It absolutely is, and that's a brilliant way of approaching it. I don't know why it hasn't been done, but it certainly seems like it's worth running up the flagpole. Of course, that would be countered. That would be countered, of course, by someone trying to speak on behalf of the fully human fetuses. You know, the ones that are little more than two cells.
Well, if you could,
and claiming that their civil rights are being violated.
If you could get enough women to go to, you know. You get 100 women of childbearing age to go down there and file suits or complaints. I mean, it really is discrimination against women. Now, they're not like I said, they're not making laws against men's reproduction. It's strictly women. So it's discrimination. But maybe when we have more time, or maybe you can... If you find out anything different, maybe you could let us know.
Well, I'll bet this will engender a few emails. So if they come in, okay. We'll certainly share them. Juanita, it's been lovely talking to you. You have a great evening, and I wish you well in recovering from the big move.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Thank you so much.
Have a good evening.
You too.
Bye now. Juanita calling from Ohio. It's time to get out of here. Let me extend thanks quickly for the fact that we are $75 closer than we were to finishing out February. We're now at $325 away from finishing things off. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, our entire all-volunteer staff. And thanks, of course, to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. We had a good tutorial today on... how to use the AIC Act to do important advocacy. Y'all have a great evening. Back tomorrow for Titanic Tuesday. Always, always, always. Gina, Judy, it's all for you. And here comes Rick Smith on the horn.